leading recall candidate Larry Elder was attacked by white liberals, a woman wearing a gorilla mask, and they were throwing eggs at him. And I believe someone with Larry actually got punched in the face because these people are completely out of their minds. As you know, there is a recall looming. The election is on the 14th. I believe it's September 14th. And this could mean that Larry Elder becomes governor. Now, the polls have started swinging in favor of Gavin Newsom, the Democrat. And there's been a big push from Democrats to, quote unquote, stop the Republican recall. But we'll see. It's yet to be seen. I think the data is actually still favorable for those who oppose Newsom. Again, yet to be seen. Regardless, I'm not surprised to see this kind of attack. It's absolutely disgusting. So we'll get into stories like that. We also got Joe Rogan questioning whether he should sue CNN because CNN's Aaron Burnett said that Joe Rogan ingested livestock medicine. We got a lot to break down. Joe Biden apparently defying his handlers by saying I'm supposed to leave and then not leaving. This is going to be real interesting. And now he's trying to dismantle this nonpartisan military panel. So it should get pretty interesting. We got a couple of great guests. We are being joined by Pennsylvania Senate candidate Sean Parnell. You want to just give a brief introduction?
Hey, I'm Sean. I'm running for Senate in Pennsylvania.
Endorsed by Trump?
Just recently endorsed by Trump. I'm an Afghanistan combat veteran. Now I write books for a living and come on your podcast a lot.
Right. Yes,
on.
So I love it.
And we also have got libertarian podcast host Peter Quinones. Do you want to introduce yourself? I pronounced that right?
Yeah, man. Pretty good. Host of the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast and executive producer of the Monopoly on Violence, which is a documentary about the state and anarcho-capitalism and libertarianism in general. And that is on Amazon Prime. And yeah, thanks for having
me. Man, I feel like we needed to have a socialist in the room to balance things out.
Oh, I could do that. I'll do that for you.
He'll do that for us.
What's up, everybody? I'm Ian Crossland. I'm a socialist, and I like social programs. I find myself on the libertarian right these days. Go game stonks. Yeah. We were just talking about like the popularity. Tim, you were saying there's six different political factions at this point.
New York Times wrote an article where they're like, here are the six political factions within the parties right now. And I think it makes a lot of sense. They say like the Growth and Opportunity Party are like the Trump supporters, right-wing populists, American populists, and they're not Christian conservatives because the Christian conservative is a separate party. And I think that makes sense.
So honestly, to find myself as a populist, conservative populist just blows my mind. I mean, I'm as a liberal.
You're not conservative. Kid.
Not really, but I identify with that movement right now.
Isn't that the weirdest thing though? That like, Ian can sit here and say a bunch of things that people in the chat are like, Ian is clearly a leftist, but they will call him right wing.
Mm-hmm.
By simply hanging out, having these conversations, saying the Democrats are bad or whatever, it's all it takes. But all right, we'll get some of that balance,
I suppose. It's not real hard, man. When you have the left dominating everything, it's real easy to react and go right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Especially if you're a logical thinker.
Sure. Yeah,
and you're seeing the size and scope of the federal government grow in ways that we have never seen before in this country, and not just bureaucracy, but the way that they track people's movements, social media, all that stuff just creates a sense of I think fear among people who are afraid of losing their freedom.
But I think, you know, you can look at Australia and you can see the quarantine camps and all the insanity they're doing with tracker apps and all that craziness. I think the U.S. would shatter into a million pieces before that would happen here, because West Virginia is not going to be like on board with that. These mountain folk are going to be like, come and take it. You know what I mean? But we'll get into all this stuff. We also got Lydia. She's pressing all the buttons.
I am the corner. Today I was reading that Australia is confiscating alcohol from Australians whom they've put into lockdown. So I'm really curious if that is what lights this on fire. So I guess we'll find out.
You can take a lot of things away from people, man, but you take their booze.
Yeah, it's not good.
All right, well, before we get into the story about Larry Elder, make sure you go to timcast.com. Become a member. There will be a members-only podcast coming up. We usually publish around 11 or so p.m. That is for members only, but you will also get access to all of our amazing journalism without advertisements on it. And as a member, you're helping support us in our efforts to hire more people, do more shows. We have a bunch of stuff in the works. I know that, you know, I've been saying that for a long time because we have this mystery show we're doing. But first you got to vet people. Mm. First you got to find somebody. Then you got to vet them. Mm. Then you got to, you know, interview them. Then you've got to move them halfway across the country. Then you've got to it takes a long time. But we've done live reads on the new shows, and it's going to be amazing. So be a member, but like this video, subscribe to this channel, share this show with your friends. Sharing is caring. It's the most powerful thing you can do. If every single person who is watching this show right now shared it on social media, we'd be bigger than CNN in 2 seconds. But if everybody did. So do your part and smash the like button for Ian. A sad Ian.
Thanks,
needs
Tim.
Your like
that's
today.
That's true.
Not so sad anymore. I can feel it. I can feel
all
the likes being tapped.
Pouring in.
Influx.
Well, let's start off with this Larry Elder thing. I gotta be honest, you know, I think there's so many extremely important stories right now. We've got obviously the Afghanistan stuff, which has been going on for a long time, especially with your expertise, Sean. We could talk about this. But then as we're coming in and sitting down, I saw this story, and for one, I'm like, this one makes me really, really mad for a few reasons. From TimCast.com, breaking, Larry Elder attacked by white liberal in gorilla mask throwing eggs. Now, personally, I don't know if liberal is the right word to use. It is kind of like the colloquial word used for like the opponents, but this person's a nut. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not gonna, I guess until the mainstream liberals come out and condemn this actively, I don't know what else to say other than they're under the same umbrella. But the story is, California gubernatorial candidate Larry Elder was attacked by a white liberal in a black and pink gorilla mask in Venice on Wednesday. The mask-wearing leftist was throwing eggs and shouting as Elder walked by. The belligerent attacker also punched a member of Elder's entourage who was attempting to get them to calm down and step away. One of her friends also punched him in the back of his head as someone else threw an egg. Quote, "Put your hands on me again and I'll F you up," the ape-masked attacker was heard shouting. Another protester ranted to the media present that Elder, who is black, doesn't even like his own people. Quote, "A flying egg narrowly missed the back of recall candidate Larry Elder's head after it was thrown by an activist wearing a gorilla mask in Venice. A scuffle broke out and the candidate was escorted into an SUV," Kate Cagle, the journalist who filmed the incident, wrote in a tweet. Now, I'll tell you what really bothers me about this, aside from the fact these people are lunatics, is that if this was someone on the right wearing a gorilla mask and going up to a black Democrat, It would be the front page, number one, above the fold, New York Times, white supremacy.
That's exactly where I was going to take. I was thinking this the entire time as you were speaking. That yeah, if this were someone on the right, it would be national news. You'd have the Today Show out there interviewing people. Oh, he was wearing a red hat. You know, I mean, you know that yep. That would be the dominant headline.
Oh, and, but I mean, no, but this is a gorilla mask.
And you approached this. Really, really fair, right? Like, well, this guy is—he's defined as a liberal, but he's probably just somebody that's struggling. Or, oh, I didn't see the news, but
right.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, it's just someone that's a little crazy, you know, that not really a liberal, but if it were a conservative, you would get no such grace from anybody.
This is what they're saying, right? So the LA Times called Larry Elder the black face of white supremacy.
Yeah, it's insane.
Which is insane. And then a leftist wearing a gorilla mask throws eggs and punches someone in his group. Where's all of the headlines? Where's Don Lemon saying, "Ladies and gentlemen, white supremacy is alive in this country"? A white woman in a gorilla mask attacking a black. You don't see it because it's not about race, not about racism. All this critical theory stuff is just we want power, and the double standard's fairly obvious, isn't it?
Well, isn't this the? You just look at this and you're like, we need to break up. We need to break up.
Just go right to it.
We need to break up.
Someone threw an egg and we're done.
Yeah, we're done. We're done.
But think about it. What did you just say? You just said that the press controls the narrative. Until the right gets a way to control the narrative, they're always going to be in charge. I mean, they've spent the last century taking over academia and the press. I mean, Of course.
Yep. You're so right. And I think for years, what the dynamic was, at least for the last 15 or 20 years, the left would set their talking points. And what's interesting about the modern day left or the new Democrat Party is their talking points are set by three or four people at the top of their party and they trickle down to the rest of the party, which is why a congressman in Western Pennsylvania espouses the same views as a congresswoman in Southern California as in Southern Florida. They're all the same. So they set these talking points. And then in the past, they'd use the media to amplify these talking points. But over time, as the market changed and stuff, you had Fox News created and talk radio and conservatives had their alternative media. But what I think is so dangerous today is so you've the same dynamic between Democrats setting their talking points and the media helping to elevate them. But now you have big tech who is censoring any conservative counterpoint. And I think one of the greatest threats that we face as a country today is the collusion between the modern day Democrat Party, big tech, big business, and big media to sort of take people's freedom away from them. And so you were talking about like some sort of alternative media. Hopefully over time we'll get there, but as long as big tech can shut your show down, I mean, look at this stuff. They could shut your show down tonight if they wanted to.
Well, I will say a lot of people have taken for granted what the internet has given them. Or I shouldn't say it that way. That's the wrong way to put it. You can't go on Tucker Carlson's show and say a lot. You can't. There's a lot of stuff you can't say on Fox News.
That's true.
We actually have way more leeway here on YouTube. But there's also things they can say that we can't because YouTube has editorial guidelines, which are not about community standards. So that is a very serious problem. But I'll tell you, you know, one of the biggest problems is, and you can see how the left reacted to this, especially in how they threw eggs at Larry Elder. The right never fought back. The American right seemed to think that appointing judges solved the problem, and it didn't. The cultural institutions are where everything comes from and flows from, and big tech is involved in that. And I think a really good example of the problem, the New York Times can just take any story, say it, and every conservative immediately pivots to address whatever the New York Times told them to talk about. So there can be some big news, like right now, Larry Elder gets attacked, this white liberal, she's a racist, white supremacist, I'll say, oh, absolutely, how dare she do that? And you're not going to see it in the media. Joe Rogan, right? We'll get into this in a minute in greater detail, but Joe Rogan talks on his Instagram channel about what his doctors prescribe him, and CNN says he's taking livestock medicine. Even though people don't trust the media, the media has very little trust across the board. Even with that, still, they set the conversation. And something, I'll tell you what's interesting, the Ukraine gate stuff with Joe Biden. When that stuff was going down, and I was researching what was going on with Burisma, the corruption of the Biden family, I found a lot of damning information, but I had to go to Eastern European sources and vet them, and it was very difficult because I'm like, I don't know who these people are, right? I don't know if these are credible sources. I don't know why I should trust CNN for that instance in that circumstance. But the interesting thing was, this is considered fringe because CNN didn't mention it. If CNN doesn't talk about it and you do, it's irrelevant, fringe, conspiracy, crackpot nonsense. Regardless of whether or not CNN or the New York Times or any of these outlets is talking about something true or false, if you talk about anything off the path of their controlled narrative in opposition or support, then you're in fringe territory. That's something that needs to change. The right needs to figure out how to actually set the tone and set the conversation.
Well, you have to also ask, is the press doing politicians' bidding, or are politicians doing the press's bidding? I have a friend who was a reporter, and he said he was in rooms where he watched reporters bully politicians into positions.
Oh, yeah.
So
look at Fauci and the mask thing.
Look at the last 5 years. I mean, from 2016 to 2018, the Republicans had the executive, the judiciary, and the legislative. They couldn't get anything done. And then right wingers were like, oh, well, that's because the left. I'm like, yeah, that's because you guys thought you had power, but the left was still in power.
Yep.
And until people start realizing that and start looking for alternatives,
Look at RussiaGate. The mainstream media comes out and says, "Oh, Russia, Russia, Russia," because Hillary Clinton said so. And the Republicans in 2016 and 2018 were like, "Well, you know, we should reasonably look at this." And then Ukraine gate happens, and it's nothing. This is the problem. The Republicans, you know what I think it was? I think that we had a uniparty for a long time. Republicans and Democrats, basically the same thing. So the Republicans were like rolling their eyes. We don't care about Trump. We don't want any of this. But the populist right gaining more and more power. And they're forced to reckon with it. So I think next year, 2022, we might see something really, really fascinating. That being said, we might see something crazy if Larry Elder becomes governor of California.
Yeah. Yes. And by the way, there are so many angles to talk about this very problem from. But what you were talking about Joe Biden and Burisma and Ukraine and the whole, like, you know, I said, you know, fire the prosecutor who is investigating my son or my family for corruption or you don't get the $1 billion. Right. That is a clear cut. Quid pro quo.
We'll have to break that one down, though.
Sure. Yeah. But I'm just saying, from 30,000 feet, right, you've got Joe Biden having a conversation with the president of Afghanistan 6 weeks before the withdrawal, 4 weeks before the collapse of Kabul. The conversation went, hey, you know, talking to the president of Afghanistan, paint an overly rosy picture of what's happening on the battlefield, essentially lie to the world to make it seem like the Taliban isn't as strong as they are, or you don't get the military assistance. But it's essentially the same thing, except for the media just flies cover for them the whole time.
I can make it very, very simple. I love asking this question, and I'm going to ask it now of all of you. Do you think that if Dave Rubin, after he got suspended on Twitter, that Twitter was scared, he would show up to Twitter HQ with a mob of classical liberals with pitchforks and torches and bricks, start violently attacking people? Do you think Jack Dorsey was like, guys, we suspended Dave Rubin. It's going to get violent here. We have to unban him. You shouldn't have done this.
No.
Absolutely not. Do you think Jack Dorsey had that conversation when they talked about banning Antifa? Yes. When they say, okay, we've got these people advocating for violence on our platform, what do? If we start banning them, they're going to come after us. They're going to show up at the headquarters. They're going to smash things. The cops will be powerless. So here's what happens. When you have these people showing up throwing eggs at Larry Elder, you have these politicians getting attacked. When the right holds a rally in the Pacific Northwest, Antifa shows up and starts attacking people and shooting at them. And now I'll tell you this, it's definitely escalated to the point where I would consider a lot of it to be mutual combat in the Pacific Northwest. But if people say, I'm going to have a free speech rally, it's permitted, leave us alone, and you show up, you started the fight. The right doesn't have any kind of threat factor. They shouldn't. The left shouldn't either. But so long as cops are unwilling to do anything about it, people are going to continually fear what the left does. We were talking about this the other day, that, you know, why is it these institutions, like the New York Times or whatever, ultimately become woke? Well, it's because the regular people there are too scared to say anything because the leftists are just terrifying and fringe lunatics. And there's very few of them, but everyone's scared of them. And that's it. So long as people are scared and unwilling. So my respect to Larry Elder, calmly walking and saying and ignoring them.
Well, can I posit a theory on that?
Sure.
I think the left likes chaos and the right, even if they don't know how to say it, they like order. I mean, look at right-wing cities, small towns. You're not having an Antifa problem. Look where the left governs. It's a mess. It's always a mess. And why does the left like disorder like that? Because the more disorder there is, the more power that they can take to themselves and say, hey, we're doing this, even if they're not doing that. And they may even want that disorder. Maybe that's what happened last year. They knew that they could grow their power if they let all of this insanity run through.
I'll say this about what you were saying. It's not like this is some crazy theory, right? Like the left has, if you would have told me that the modern day Democrat Party 4 years ago would be advocating for a position of defunding the police wholesale, right? And just anti-police rhetoric, right?
They walked that one back quick.
They did, but it has consequences. And you're seeing, as you mentioned, like crime in almost every major American city, Philadelphia, in my case, in Pennsylvania.
But they also told the police to stand down so they could have more chaos.
I agree with you. I'm just saying that their anti-cop rhetoric, coupled with defund the police, coupled with mixed signals from leadership, creates chaos in their cities, right? Primarily Democrat power centers. And you see that empirically as well with rise in murder, rise in crimes, things like that.
We got to go back to what you were saying about Burisma, though, because I want to do... elaborate and correct a little bit. So you had mentioned that, you know, Joe Biden, you know, he goes to the prosecutor and says, shut down the investigation into the corruption of my son, otherwise you're not getting $1 billion. More specifically, it was that Joe Biden's son, for some reason, was appointed to a board member of a Ukrainian energy company, and a lot of people wonder why that was the case. Now, Hunter Biden's like, look, I was an executive, and I have experience, and I'm a lawyer, and it's like, sure, okay, fine, say whatever you want. But the media started saying there was no corruption investigation into Burisma. It wasn't into Hunter Biden, it was into the company, and Mykola Slachevsky, the guy who founded the company. That was a lie. Matt Taibbi did excellent reporting on this, breaking down how there was at least a dozen investigations. And I'll tell you the kicker. It's been a while since I covered all this stuff, because I was talking about how I had to go to foreign media to find this stuff out. The media control of the narrative is so pronounced that they wouldn't actually do the basic investigation into what Joe Biden did, and what Joe Biden did was criminal and corrupt, based on what I've researched. To put it simply, Joe Biden comes in, goes to the head of, you know, the president of Ukraine, and says, either you fire the prosecutor or you're not getting the $1 billion loan. He brags about it on video. So they do. Now, the prosecutor, Viktor Shokin, says he was investigating corruption. Matt Taibbi confirms there was an investigation. But I'll tell you this, the funny thing is, after they get rid of the prosecutor, so Biden says, we got rid of the prosecutor because he wasn't doing the investigation. Funny story. After the prosecutor got ousted, Zlochevsky returned to Ukraine from exile, got his money unfrozen. When Donald Trump comes in, starts poking around, dude flees to Monaco. Tell me who is actually investigating corruption. So I'll tell you this, based on, and this is an older story, but this is what the media does. We see it over and over again with how they frame things. Hunter Biden story, when that came out, the laptop and the leaked details, and we knew, like, okay, this is legit, it's confirmed. What happened? Big tech came in and shut the whole thing down.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's my whole point. So, you know, leading people ask about the 2020 election and was it fair and all this other stuff. And I think there are a lot of different layers to that. But one of the reasons why Joe Biden is where he is today is because of what you just said with regards to censoring stories that were negative about him. And so we're seeing today, you know, his poll numbers are falling for, I think, a litany of reasons. But, you know, things are getting to a point, whether it's, you know, lackluster job growth. I mean, the miss this last month, like, I think, what, 725,000 jobs expected, 225,000 added, and then inflation, which is obviously, we talked about this in the last, brutal. And it primarily affects the middle class and seniors on fixed incomes, you know. But also, you're looking at a wholesale collapse of American foreign policy doctrine. Right now, you're seeing that most notably in Afghanistan. But the things that are happening now are almost impossible to censor, and they don't really fit into the media narrative. And that, the way that you know that the situation in Afghanistan was as bad as it was is because MSNBC and CNN were actually reporting on it. So you know if they're reporting on it, it was 10 times worse than what it actually, the way we're seeing it here.
Well, come on. Let's face it. MSNBC and the left media loves war. When was the first time they praised Trump? When he dropped bombs on Syria.
Yeah.
That's when he became presidential. We talked about this before. The New York Times and MSNBC helped lie us into the war in Iraq in 2002, 2003. They have on Meet the Press. There's commercials for Boeing. Is the average Meet the Press person watching Meet the Press in the market for a 737? Or is it a payoff of some sort?
I want to show you guys this. We'll talk about media manipulation. A lot of people like talking about how CNN, MSNBC, all the ratings are in the gutter. They couldn't even break a million. Their key demo viewership is like 80,000 to 100,000. Then I get people mentioning being like, oh, Tim, you get way more views. And we're sitting here like, man, our viewership in the key demo is way higher than MSNBC. But it's not about MSNBC. It's about how they're getting on social media. Let me ask you, it's really interesting when we're talking about this manipulation stuff, how it is that someone like Vosh, who is he's 26, he's a socialist, and he's pro-Biden. I'm like, how does that happen? How does a young, edgy, upstart socialist come to support the crony capitalist corrupt candidate of the establishment party? Let me show you this thing on Reddit right here, and we'll see if I can actually, you can sort of see the image. Maybe I can, okay, I can't get the image. This is r/political humor. Political humor, they say. It's got 1.429 million readers. I go on Reddit all the time. And when you're on Reddit, you'll typically see these memes from political humor. Now, is it sane, rational, and honest humor? No, it's manipulation. How do I know? Their image on political humor is a man. You can't really see it on the camera. Sorry, I can't show it to you guys. You can sort of see it. There's a mother, a daughter, and a son. And they're all looking out at an open door as a man is walking up the sidewalk to the house, like coming home from work. The family members are all holding knives. Mm-hmm. As the dad is walking up, coming home from work, wiping the sweat off his brow. On the man walking in, it says Joe Biden. On the family members holding knives, hiding, it says military-industrial complex and mainstream media. As if to imply, the mainstream media and the military-industrial complex don't like Joe Biden and are waiting to surprise attack him.
Huh.
The narrative that you get when you go on these big tech platforms, these social media platforms, is that Joe Biden is being unfairly smeared. What did we hear recently? I can't remember who said it. They were like, the big difference between Joe Biden and Donald Trump is that Biden doesn't have a media apparatus willing to defend him at all costs like Trump did.
What?
Gaslighting. Like, who in their right mind who remembered anything about this is like, yes, the media loved Trump. They were praising him nonstop.
I remember Biden being the worst candidate in 2008. Absolute, most boring. Like, what is this old piece of trash doing on stage? Who is he, first of all, and why is he up there? He's terrible, annoying. And then Obama appointed him. I'm like, what the heck? The worst choice on the stage, and Obama stuck him in. And now this nobody is president. How quickly people, I mean, if you don't remember watching 2008 CNN debates of Biden being a, just but old school war hawk on stage. I mean, sorry, Tim, what were you going to say?
No, you're right. You're right. I don't want to interrupt you. I'm saying you're right.
How in 10 years, how much things can change is just shocking to me.
But what you need to understand is the 10-year-old in 2008 was not watching that debate and they voted for Biden this time around.
I missed his 1988 plagiarism debacle. I don't know. Do you guys vividly remember?
Yeah. Where he lifted whole parts of a UK labor leader's life and assumed it as his own. Is Joe Biden, is that his actual name? Is he really named Joe Biden? I don't know.
His name's Joe Bob Jr. You know that? I'm not kidding.
Well, he took a UK
Joseph
labor.
Robinette. Biden,
yeah.
Joe Bob
Jr. Yeah, Joe Bob Jr.
Yeah.
Actually,
I don't know if Bob is short for Robinette.
Is Bob short for Robinette?
I'm just kidding.
I was like, how is it that I don't know this?
You threw shots.
So he plagiarized this guy in 1988, basically had to dip out of the presidential election, had to resign from the election process or whatever, and then, he stepped out of the limelight for a decade. People forgot who he was, and then
he was still a senator.
I never even heard his name from between 88 and 2006.
Wasn't he the guy who looked at Clarence Thomas and accused him of being a rapist or something like that?
That sounds right.
I wasn't politically activated until 2006.
Joe Biden
either.
Said that he was number one in his college class. No, he was like in the bottom third. I mean, he lifted, like as I mentioned, whole sections of some UK labor leader's life. I mean,
yeah.
Joe Biden has been, like, he has been a fantastical liar his entire, now he says he's against the Iraq war, but he voted for the Iraq war. I mean, he's just lies almost about every, there was something that he was lying. Oh, about going to, the place in Western Pennsylvania, the,
Oh yeah, I remember. I can't remember the name, but I remember.
In Squirrel Hill, it's right in Squirrel Hill.
Was it like a synagogue?
Yeah, it's a synagogue in Squirrel. My God, the Tree of Life. He said he was there. He wasn't even there. So he just lies about everything.
But this is the thing today. When you have, you don't need a candidate when you have the media, when they're all lining up to say whatever they need to say and suppress what needs to be suppressed. As long as you have that, Joe Biden can call a lid, go in his basement, and go to sleep. That's what he did. Isn't it amazing? I love the Atlantic article. Stay alive, Joe Biden. All we need is your corporeal form. Yeah. They just needed a name. You know why Obama chose Biden?
Someone probably told him to.
Apparently what they were saying was that there was concerns that voters would be worried that, you know, the first black president wouldn't win. So they said, you take an old white man and put him as the VP, and then racist Americans would vote for it. That's a lot of the rhetoric I remember hearing back in the day. So
is this at all surprising, though? I mean, you had, 8 years ago, somebody at Yale saying, what college was it? They said there was a Klan meeting, and it was like a white sheet covering like a projector or something like that.
Oh,
and
yeah. That's right. Oh, my gosh. I forgot about that.
No, it was like they looked through a window.
Yeah.
And they saw like a sheet over something, and they said there was a Klan meeting. And then when they were like, turns out someone just draped a sheet over a projector.
I forgot about that.
These people are insane.
And then a reality show host gets elected president, and then a whole country allows itself to be shut down for a spicy flu, and there's still people out there who think that it's killing. There are surveys taken all the time that are like, how many percentage people do you think have died in this area? Oh, at least 20%.
There's a poll that came out the other day that said like 10% or something. I don't know.
So
don't put me in the numbers.
Of course you can get a corpse elected.
10% of Democrats believe that like something like, or wait, no, no, 35% of Democrats believe that 10%, like that 10% of people die with COVID.
So this is, right? This is what happens when you have people who blindly believe whatever the media tells them. And I'm wondering what happened, because I know people who didn't used to, they used to have critical thinking abilities. You know, friends of mine. Gone. All of a sudden it's like they turn on CNN and they're like, Joe Rogan ate livestock medicine. They go, wow. Why would he do that? What an idiot.
Critical thinking in today's day and age is something that is going by the wayside, pretty fast. Liberalism was all about back in the day in the wake of the Vietnam War. If the government told you to eat white bread, you were eating wheat bread. Didn't matter. Liberalism was about tolerance. It was about free thinking. It was about critical thinking. But the modern day left has sort of shifted from, critical thinking, free tolerance to almost strict adherence to believing everything that the government says.
Even when it contradicts it.
You see this in reporters. Like, you see this in reporters, and I learned this during my first congressional run, where we would be asking questions that I think perfectly legitimate questions about the election. And these questions were important because we should all aspire to make our elections better every cycle. And the only way that you do that is by asking important questions and hope that we can all work together to make things better. But what would happen is the governor would release a statement in response to us with no empirical evidence backing it up. And it would just be like, oh, you guys are screwed up. You know what we're talking about. And then the media would regurgitate those very same talking points. So these are conspiracy theorists. Their job is to speak truth to power. Yet what they do is just regurgitate talking points from the authority.
We have good news on this front, though. Let's talk about what happened with Joe Rogan, because this is where they made a big mistake with Joe. You can't go to the biggest podcaster in the world who has more ratings than you do and accuse him of doing something he didn't do and makes no sense. So now we have the story. Joe Rogan considers suing CNN over claims he used livestock drug against COVID. They're making ish up, Rogan said. I literally got it from a doctor. Joe Rogan gets sick. He comes out and he says, hey, guys, I had COVID, tested positive. The doctor prescribed monoclonal antibodies, Z-Pak, prednisone, ivermectin. And he says within a couple of days he was feeling great. That's a doctor's prescription. Now, I will always state the CDC says doctors shouldn't prescribe it. It is not authorized or approved by the FDA. But that's between Joe and his doctor. And I'm like, okay, if his doctor prescribed it, I'm not a doctor. You talk to your doctor. Don't talk to me. Mm-hmm. What does CNN do? What did every outlet do?
Huh.
Instead of saying that a doctor prescribed it and he went to Walgreens or whatever to pick it up, they said it was livestock medicine. So I don't know if Joe's actually considering suing, but what he said was, you know, do I have to sue CNN when he brought this up? And I immediately thought, I was like, you know, CNN's got to be more careful in that, right? Nope. I want to play for you this clip. I want you to actually hear what CNN said, and hopefully this plays well, but let's play it. Okay, it's not playing at all. I think it's because, why is it?
Gotta unmute the tab.
That's right, I gotta unmute CNN. Surprise, surprise, I have CNN muted. All right, let's try this again. Okay, it's still not making any sound.
Where's my sound?
Oh, it didn't work. Why didn't it work?
What the heck? There you go. Okay.
That's weird. All right, we're gonna try this again, and we're gonna play.
One of the world's highest paid and most influential podcast hosts, Joe Rogan, just announcing that he's tested positive for coronavirus. Rogan telling his 13 million Instagram followers that he was treated with several drugs, and he included ivermectin on the list, a drug used for livestock. The FDA and the CDC warn against using to treat COVID.
On the Chiron, while she's saying this, it says, Joe Rogan says he has COVID, taking livestock drug despite warnings.
Oh, that's the mistake. You can use ivermectin for livestock, but livestock is not a drug.
That's right.
Right. But let's talk about the manipulation of the media in this regard. It's so brazen. I think this is actually great news for everybody. For one, I think Joe Rogan should sue them.
Yes.
And every single outlet that said this, because think about how insane it would be if you went to the doctor and people corrected me the other day. So I'll be more careful on this one. You go to the doctor and he prescribes you ibuprofen. Are we going to call that dog medicine? Now, some people pointed out dogs can't have a lot of ibuprofen.
Benadryl.
I looked at, dogs can in very small doses, but they typically would give them aspirin in small doses. So let's just say this. They do give aspirin to dogs. Am I going to claim that Erin Burnett, was seen ingesting dog medicine? That she went to a local store in New York purchasing dog medicine and then ingesting it in a shockingly insane move? No, that's insane. That's a lie. So Joe Rogan's a guy who goes to his doctor and his doctor's like, here's what I want you to do. And Joe says, okay, I guess. And now they're claiming he's taking livestock drug. That is so overt and over the top. This is going to wake people up. They're going to start asking questions about this. Because there's no way. I mean, there's going to be a lot of bad faith people who are like, it's for horses. It's not. There are horse versions of it. But there's going to be a lot of regular people who are like, what? Well, why would Joe? I love Joe Rogan. I watch him on Netflix.
Well, I think the one thing that Rogan said in that first 14 minutes with Segura was he said they couldn't get the vaccine through. They couldn't get the vaccine through the emergency authorization use unless there was no other treatment.
But
when I got it, I took ivermectin. I
your doctor better. Prescribed it?
No.
I'm not. See, gonna, I would
I'm
recommend.
Not gonna,
against
I'm not going
to
say how I got it, and then towards the end of it, there was some other stuff that another one that Trump had mentioned last year that got demonized, and that knocked it out of my system completely, and I was fine. Four days later.
But how, the challenge with this stuff is there's no control when people just decide to self-medicate or whatever. And I suppose the challenge
is consent. I mean,
that's what?
That's consent. That's personal consent. That's me doing what I want to do. That's me doing what I want to my body. The left complains, oh, the reason everything is so expensive in healthcare in this country is because it's a free market. It's a free market, really? Hmm. I can't order medication that I want. I can't say, oh, I want to treat myself with this. I should be able to put anything into this stupid thing right here that I want to.
Very, very libertarian argument.
It is a libertarian argument, but imagine if it was a free market.
So hold on. I gotta address this.
All right. Do your thing.
So what I would say is always go to your doctor. I'm not going to question someone's doctor giving a prescription. When it comes to Joe Rogan, they're highlighting the livestock, the ivermectin, and the problem with that is he also got monoclonal antibodies, which is does have emergency use authorization, which completely, in my opinion, debunks the argument made by Joe and the one you just made. If the concern was really that if they authorize ivermectin, then the vaccines lose EUA, that would make no sense for Regeneron's monoclonal antibodies. If they really thought that there was an effect, that ivermectin was effective, they could just do an EUA and retain the emergency authorization for any other treatment they've already given an EUA to as well. Plus, Comirnaty has already been approved. And so I guess the argument they're saying is until it hits market as a brand, the EUAs will remain. I don't think Moderna and Johnson & Johnson will just lose their emergency authorization because something got approved. So that doesn't make sense. I suppose you can argue profit motive, but then you're starting to get into, you know, I don't know. It starts making more and more assumptions. It could just be that there was a meta-analysis of 14 studies showing that ivermectin was inconclusive. There's also a meta-analysis of 53 studies saying that it was showing that I forgot what the word is, but long story short, that it inhibited ivermectin. So if these both...
Inhibited COVID?
I'm sorry. Yeah. Inhibited COVID. Sorry. My conclusion ultimately is if there's insufficient data or if there's conflicting data, then perhaps the answer is simply... The CDC doesn't want people recommending something they're unsure about because it might not actually do anything. There might be some people saying like, wow, it really worked for me. Yeah, well, Joe Rogan also got monoclonal antibodies. So we can't say definitively because there's no control. So when you have someone who gets sick and then says, I went and took X medication or whatever, it's like, yeah, well, we need a control to figure out whether or not that was actually you ingesting something or if he just beat it. So ultimately, I'll just put it this way. I think people are making a huge mistake ingesting horse medicine in any amount. So that's the big story. People, like, I'll tell you this, the horse paste, the horse ivermectin, sold out in a lot of places. Mm-hmm. That to me, I think is absolutely insane. Simply because there is human grade and there's animal grade. We mentioned this the other day, but I can't ignore breaking down the points. Otherwise, people get mad in Super Chat. When the U.S. government is regulating something, and it sounds like you're going to be less of a big fan of a lot of the regulations, but when they're like, okay, we're going to approve something, they'll say, hey, we can't put this much lead in it because human livers can't handle that, and it'll make them really sick. So this cannot be approved in this formulation. But for a horse, they might be like, oh, horse kidneys are fantastic. We don't got to worry about that appearing in it. So what happens is animal grade stuff is very, very different. The example I give is that cats can drink salt water. Humans can't. We wouldn't simply look at a cat drinking salt water and be like, I can drink it too. So I think people are making a huge mistake. That being said, these news stories about, you know, the hospitals being flooded and everything are completely BS. It was a huge hoax. Ultimately, I just say, you know, I think people can do what they want to do, I suppose. But when it comes to any medical decisions, I think it's got to come from someone who actually knows what they're talking about. Otherwise, you fall victim to manipulations, conspiracies. And if you're willing to go to Tractor Supply for stuff because you read something on the internet and you haven't found a good doctor, even a Trump-supporting doctor, a hardcore Trump-supporting doctor who read all these news stories, like, yo, people can trick you into doing really dumb things. And I think it's not a good idea to go.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You can go into Mexico, you can walk into any pharmacy and say, give me ivermectin, give me hydroxychloroquine, and you can treat yourself. If people were doing that in Mexico, which I assume they are, and they were dropping dead from this, I think we'd be hearing about that all over the media.
Yeah, I think it ultimately just comes down to, for one, do you trust the media? Do you trust the Mexican media? And I don't think the issue is death. The CDC says the issue is potential side effects. And the bigger issue, like I mentioned, is, If there's monoclonal antibodies, which the FDA says is authorized, it works. Joe Rogan took that, got better. And there's vaccines, which they say, you know, if you look at Israel and some of these other countries, the efficacy has been dropping and they're advocating for booster shots. So that becomes a big challenge. But ultimately, do we say, hey, look, we have a big chunk of studies that say it's good and a big chunk of studies saying we're not sure and it's inconclusive. Do we advocate for something we're unsure about? What if people then say, I'll do that instead, and then it doesn't work and things get worse?
I'm not advocating for it either way. I'm just saying that I did this and I did that, and it wasn't from a tractor supply store, and I'm
here. I'm talking specifically about people, like literally you go to the local tractor supply, there's none left. Mm. And they have a big sign saying don't eat it, and I agree, you shouldn't. I just put it this way. You can't get medical advice from us. No one here is a doctor who knows. We're not also not doing research on this stuff. That's why you got to find out who you trust from medical professionals and talk to them.
I have one thing to add to this is what makes me uncomfortable, right? This is a once in a 100-year, you know, pandemic, right? We're still in the infancy of researching COVID-19 and effective therapeutics and vaccines, and you know, now you're needed 1, 2, 3 boosters. Why then, while we are trying to explore scientifically, right, and embracing the scientific method with regards to finding an effective vaccine and therapeutics, why then are we censoring discourse that doesn't fit the media narrative, right? While we're talking about media narratives, it was like you're seeing, you know, YouTube channels or censored of actual doctors. Board certified doctors, virologists, epidemiologists, they're getting censored because they're not saying the right stuff. Well, these are doctors, and it's not like they're coming at these positions from like left field. These are clearly not conspiracy theories, yet they're being censored. And I think what happens when you do that is it creates a sense of unease in people, and it makes people think that the information that they're getting might not be trustworthy because some points are okay to make, some are not. Now, clearly,
it's the advice. That's the problem. It's when the doctors, like, you know, Brett Weinstein did his podcast. The reason he got a strike was because they were advising people to take action.
Oh, interesting.
And that, like, when Joe Rogan went on the show, this was one of the first controversies when he said, you know, he would advise young people not to get the vaccine. I'm like, I don't think Joe should be giving people advice on what they should do with, you know, medical treatments. We had Candace Owens on, and she said he's entitled to his opinion. I said, that's true. He should be able to give his opinion. And so,
well, having an opinion and saying your opinion are different things. He should be able to have an opinion.
He should be able
whether
to
or not he expresses it, it's up to the terms of service of the
issue
medium.
Was directly saying you advise people to do something. If Joe said, I don't think X should happen, I think that'd be a little bit different from telling people. So I'll tell you this. It's funny when you see people say, I am not a financial advisor. I am not a lawyer. I am not giving legal advice. We hear that all the time. But the same thing is true for medical advice. I don't like the idea of like armchair medical therapy stuff because like here's my issue. I don't think just because I distrust the media, I should go ahead and just trust someone else outright. And when I look at the FDA's website, and again, I don't necessarily inherently trust the government. I think there's revolving door policies. We've got people from big pharma and they revolving door into government stuff. There's reason to always be skeptical. But at the same time, when I read things in the mainstream media that are outright fabrications, and then I go to the CDC website, the CDC says something substantially more honest. I say substantially because it's ultimately down to who you trust, but you go to the FDA or the CDC, what does the FDA say about the Pfizer vaccine community? They have a whole insert saying there's insufficient data on pregnancies and there's no long-term effects because it's now entering long-term trials. The FDA literally says that. They're not hiding it from you. You go to the media and they'll tell you it's not true. They'll be like, no, it was all done. It's like, why are you, the FDA doesn't say that. I can go to their websites. And that was something that I think was kind of big for me when I was looking up the appropriate actions. What does YouTube say to do that people should be not advising medical treatments? People should be going to their medical professionals. A lot of people say like, oh, but Tim, all doctors are dumb. And I'm like, yo, what if you have a Trump supporting doctor? Like conservative doctors exist, right? You don't think they're dumb, I guess?
Well, one way you phrased earlier is talk to someone that knows what they're talking about, i.e. a doctor. But the problem is doctors don't know everything, and sometimes they learn only a specific amount of information. They know it really well, but they don't know.
And that doesn't change the argument.
It doesn't change the argument.
If you go to a doctor, he's like, I have no idea what this is. Like, why are you going to him? It's It's like I always say, you don't go to Carpenter to fix your toilet.
That's why you should consider going to lots of different doctors is my point, I guess, because every doctor is going to know a different amount of information about different concepts.
I think YouTube is scared of liability. I think they're terrified of it. I think when people say, go out and say, I'm not a financial advisor, they're worried about liability. I mean, that's why we say it, because we don't want people to be like, oh, they advised me to do something and got sick. Like if we come out, we told people to take some kind of medical action and then they went and did and got sick and died, we'd be on the hook for millions of dollars. No, we don't give medical advice. I understand that YouTube's scared of liability. I think ultimately it comes down to the bottom dollar. Talking like another example of how this functions is we're talking with Chloe Valdery. She does the theory of enchantment. It's like anti-racism training that's like opposed to wokeness and critical race theory. She was saying the reason these institutions are implementing this critical race theory stuff is not because they believe it. It's because they're scared of liability. They're worried about getting sued or whatever. So they're just like, bring the people and let them say whatever they want. I think that's a big driving force in this. Obviously, Big Pharma wants to make a lot of money. They get guaranteed no liability contracts with all the vaccines. And because of that, it sows distrust. So ultimately, I'm like this. Just because a big pharma is getting a contract doesn't mean you should just trust the other person saying something wildly different. That's why I'm like, dude, don't let the culture war influence your medicine. Like, obviously, do your research, but you got to find someone who's convincing, like who's going to be like, let me show you the literature. Let me break it down for you. Let me take those partisans out of the picture and make sure I'm giving you good medical advice.
When you get people that abuse the literature like CNN just did with this thing saying, yeah, saying that it's what do they say exactly? What's the thing, the ticker, the words that came up?
Taking livestock drug despite warnings.
That is misinformation. It's not livestock drug. And they deserve to be sued. I don't want to say he should because it's not me doing it. It's a big process to do it. But if he sues them, this becomes a nexus point of whether or not this stuff is animal feed livestock medicine.
Isn't there a part of this? I mean, you're I agree with everything that you're saying, but like when President Trump talked about the potential of hydroxychloroquine, or right, is that what it is? Hydroxychloroquine.
It was
Z-Pak.
Yeah, the combo Z-Pak.
It felt like the media just opposed it because Trump said it, and there was no critical thinking to go behind it. Hey, this is the president of the United States. Like, he might be privy to medical information that maybe, at least in early stages, that we don't have. But then after Trump is not president anymore, there's what studies that have come out that say, hey, maybe hydroxychloroquine is somewhat effective.
They were doing studies the whole time, and there was a promising study out of France, is why Trump mentioned it. And here's what happened. Trump would read something in the news, say it, and then immediately the news would flip on the whole thing. So it was TechCrunch.
Right.
TechCrunch reported that the combination, it was zinc and azithromycin and hydroxychloroquine, was promising. Promising is a long way to go before determining efficacy and truth. So Trump was like, it looks very good, we'll see. And then immediately they were like, Trump is pushing conspiracies.
That's right. That's
and
exactly
people
right.
are eating fish medicine and all this other nonsense. I will tell you, it is true. There have been anecdotes about people who buy the horse paste from Tractor Supply, eat the whole thing. And I'm like, we get people saying like, well, you're not supposed to eat the whole thing. You're not supposed to eat it. It says on it, you can't even give it to a horse intended for human consumption. I didn't know horse was like a commonly eaten thing, but it even says
it's funny when it says, do not give to horses meant for human consumption is what it says on the box. But what it means is do not feed to horses that are meant for human consumption.
And it says
do not feed to horses, period, meant for human consumption. You see how I could mix that up?
Right.
Are they telling me it's meant for human? What does this say?
Yeah, I can see that.
Don't feed it to horses that you're going to eat.
If you're going to eat, exactly. So anyway, the point is when right now Reuters, it has been reported, actually a couple months ago, Reuters reported that Oxford is doing a study on ivermectin, which is promising. And so I'm just like, can we just chill? You know, do we say like, okay, this is really great, Oxford. This is fantastic. We got a bunch of other studies. There's data coming out of other countries. Can we have a serious conversation about this? Well, the media lies, so that makes it impossible. YouTube is paranoid and terrified of
liability
issues, so they go nuts on it. And then my ultimate thing is like, bro, I don't think we should be giving people advice on what they should be ingesting anyway. I think their doctor should be doing that. So if that's the way to just be like, we don't give financial advice, we don't give legal advice, we don't give medical advice, all right, well, there we go. I'm not even advising people to get the vaccine because that's the same thing. And that's another big complaint I had when Casey Neistat told me on Twitter that he pulls into a parking lot, waited for 45 minutes and stuck his arm out the window to get a shot. And I was like, bro, did you talk to your doctor? And they got mad at me. I get all these leftists mad at me for saying, talk to your doctor about getting the vaccine, because we don't want adverse reactions. We don't want to hear these stories about people who have anaphylaxis. There was early on nurses had anaphylactic shock from this. And then they were like, okay, maybe you shouldn't get the second dose. I'm like, well, it's a good idea for people to go to their doctor before getting medicated. But what you get now from the mainstream left, and this is what YouTube allows. YouTube will definitely allow you to give medical advice so long as you're telling people to get vaccinated without going to their doctors, which is insane.
Oh, that they, I don't know.
But this,
that,
the, you're, this weird. Is my whole point. This is the point that I was trying to make. So the liability argument is perhaps a compelling one, and one that I could be swayed. But the point that I was making to you is that some opinions are okay, right? Some are not. And that right there, like, you can get banned for saying something that is counter to the media narrative. Like you said, you could go on YouTube right now and advocate for people to get vaccinated, right, without consulting their doctor. That's okay. You don't get censored for that. But any discussion of, you know, promising medicine that is not approved, you get censored. What that does from a societal standpoint is create a divide. And it sows distrust.
Well, that's
the more discourse, the better, right?
That is the liability. The reason. So here's the important point. In the rules, it specifically says that you can't say there's a cure. You can't advocate for treatments, and you must tell people to go and talk to them. It doesn't say you must, but it's like you can't discourage people from seeking out medical professionals, something like that. The issue is ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, Z-Pak are not authorized by the FDA for use in treating this. Because of that, you can't tell people to do it.
You know what else is a huge problem with this is the our institute. Nobody trusts our institutions
yes.
anymore. And they have become.
Everything's political.
Everything is political. And in fact, that is a goal of the radical left, is to sort of penetrate institutions and as a way to exercise some sort of control over people. And now nobody trusts institutions anymore.
You can run for your county treasurer, and somebody's going to ask you what your opinion on abortion.
Right.
Yeah. That's where we're at now.
That's true. Where we're at. It's true.
But this is the problem I have with the whole, with a lot of the debates over a lot of things. And that's why people are like, Tim's a milquetoast fence sitter. I'm like, dude, I'm not just going to say I trust one faction over the other because I don't trust one faction. You know what I mean? Like, trust is earned. So when it comes to any kind of scientific research, I'm like, I look at this and just say, I got to make sure I'm not getting my information from culture war sources on this one. You know, if I go to my doctor and I say, here's a story, what do you think? And he doesn't know about it, I'll find a better doctor. If I'm like, hey, here, have you heard of Brett Weinstein's podcast? What do you think? And if he's like, I'm not sure, I'll be like, okay, maybe I need someone who's been following all of this debate and this news. There was a guy who was in the, you guys know the Frontline Doctors Coalition or whatever?
Yeah.
Apparently there's a guy who like defected. I don't know if that's the right word, but he's been critical. And he was speaking with this progressive on YouTube how, you know, he's critical of the media lies, saying a lot of same things I'm saying. And he was also adding that it seems like some of these guys who are advocating for ivermectin, it's become overtly political for them, where they're so angry at the media for lying about horse dewormer and livestock that now they just assume anybody who challenges the idea is pushing some kind of narrative, when in reality, there are studies that are promising and there are studies that are saying nothing, that there was no impact or that it ultimately didn't help at all. And so we're investigating, trying to figure out if it works, but it's breeding zealots. It's the counter identity, right? We talked about this again with Chloe, that some people have counter dependent identities where their identity is based upon hating the other group. And that's why I'm like, look, man, you can believe that the right tends to be more honest in their media and the establishment left is lying nonstop. That's true. That doesn't mean you can just assume certain science is or isn't correct without going through it. And it also means for someone like me, I'm like, when I had Chris Martinson here and he was like, look at the studies that say this, I Google searched the opposite and found studies that said the opposite. And I'm like, what should I blindly trust you when I can find a bunch of other studies saying something else? And then am I supposed to assume all those other studies are conspiracies? I can't do that. I literally can't. Throw my hands up. Go to a doctor, man. I have no idea. That simple.
Were there studies when you were looking through them that you said there were a lot of positive studies that showed promising effectivity and then a lot of studies that were, they didn't know? Were there studies that said it didn't work?
Yes. When I say inconclusive or didn't know, it was like they were literally saying we saw no change at all.
Interesting.
No impact whatsoever.
Well, to me that breeds at least the need for new studies. If there's a bunch of studies, that's good.
Yeah, I mean the Oxford one that came out a couple months ago. So the problem, I will say this. This discussion is a hot topic for sure. People are probably super chatting right now saying, Tim, you're wrong for whatever. It's like, okay, I'm fine with being wrong. I'm not a doctor. I can't tell you what for. What I can tell you is, isn't this proof the media lies?
Well, what's happening? Is this the administrative deep state? Like these people that aren't elected, but like the head of the CIA, the people that are appointed and that have these long careers, are they feeding information to the media and they're telling the media, project it like this, and then the media is, and then the politicians
Ian, you gotta stop.
Are the number three. It starts with the administration, deep state.
No, I'm sorry.
They
dude.
Feed information. Let me finish this first and then disagree with me.
I'm sorry. I'm stopping you right now.
Why? What part?
You have jumped the shark.
No, I'm wondering. I'm asking. How so?
Is the deep state CIA feeding information?
No, the administrative state, the people that are appointed, not elected, the people that are being appointed that have these long careers that don't. They're not getting voted out, basically.
What does the CIA have to do with what CIA
whoever the head of the CIA is appointed?
It's like a Mockingbird argument.
He's the head of the CIA is appointed. He's not. We don't vote for him. And so there's all these organizations with these appointees. They call it the administrative state. Are those people
that
feeding
has
news?
Nothing to do with anything.
Well, where's
that
the
we're
media getting its parroting point that they're all repeating? It's coming
when
from somewhere.
When it comes to war, CNN, MSNBC definitely appoint former spooks and government agents to talk about why war is good and why Trump was bad. And then Trump was all of a sudden good when he bombed stuff. When Big Pharma buys advertisements and then all of a sudden people are scared to criticize them, or when YouTube is scared of liability, or when you have this dominant dogmatic tribal cult that just agrees with itself as long as it's in opposition to the other because they're counter-dependent ideologies, that is just a very simple phenomenon we've been experiencing.
So you think
to come out and just be like the government conspiracy is feeding lies?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say it is. I'm asking, is this possible? Like, so you're saying it's more of an emergent thing where there's people that have money invested. The media doesn't want to lose that money. The people in the media are actually psychotic and they believe this refuse. So there's that reason. Do you think that's more likely than that there's an organization that's kind of controlling it?
Donald Trump came out and said, hey, this study out of France is promising. And the media immediately went insane screaming Trump was a Nazi and pushing conspiracies. So then you get all of these tribalists being like, well, the media said it now because they hate Trump. They've been trying to find a replacement for Trump since Trump left. Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert, Tucker Carlson. It doesn't work. Trump is Trump. Nobody else is Trump. But you have an entire group of 70 or I think it's unfair to say 70 million people, but the Democratic voter base that for some reason believes the economy is good right now when we have even higher record job openings number. We have 7 million people losing their benefits. We have an eviction moratorium ending. Yet when you ask Democrat voters, is the economy good? They say, yes, those people are insane. And they believe. And here's the issue. People talk about red pill, blue pill. The red pill people are woken up. The people who are living in the matrix are writing the news and writing public policy. They're not just sitting back believing lies from some grand overseer who's trickling down fake news from the deep state. These people genuinely eat their own refuse and then spit it back out in the New York Times. And then other people hear it and they believe it again. The best example I think is Jack Dorsey himself. Used to be the free speech wing of the Free Speech Party. Then Twitter became an algorithmic nightmare where people were screaming at the top of their lungs because rage generates retweets. All of a sudden, within a decade, Jack Dorsey is now ultra woke, believing this insane refuse, his own system fed back to him. They have no ability to raise their head above the clouds and take a look around and see what's happening. They're stuck in a mess of their own making. Some people know it's a lie and they grift. A lot of people will read CNN and say, wow, it's true. Joe Rogan took livestock medicine. And then they'll go on just believing it's all a fact, spreading it all to their friends, and they're adamant that they know the facts. Then they come to you and say, wow, economy's doing pretty well, isn't it? And you're like, 7.5 million people just lost their benefits. The eviction moratorium has ended. That certainly is not indicative of a good economy, is it? 10.9 million job openings. We only filled 235,000 jobs the past month when we already had record openings. And you can Google search closed, shortage and see all the businesses, all the government institutions that are collapsing as we speak. And these people believe the economy is good? I'm sorry, we got a large faction, tens of millions of people who have lost their minds in this country, who will sit here and tell you you're in the cult, you're the evil Trump cultist conspiracy theorist, simply because you Google search things instead of just believing CNN.
Man, that is like, all right, that's good. Good show, everybody. Good show, everybody.
Yeah, let me pull this up. Let's get into this. How about we do this? U.S. job openings surpass 10.9 million. Dang. The number of open jobs in America is greater than the number of unemployed people, and that's 2 months in a row now. Now, last month they filled close to a million jobs, but had 10.1 million openings. That was a record, and that meant there were more openings than people available to work. From April to July, we lost 3 million jobs per month, about just shy of 3 million, but only gained about a couple hundred thousand per month. So it was like for every three jobs lost, one job has been gained. The economy is not doing well. You look at all the shortages, all the shutdown, and there's still people in this country who are like, yay, Joe Biden, the economy is doing pretty good. And I have no idea how that's possible. But I'll tell you this. If these people at CNN and MSNBC continue to push this stuff, they are the people who are stripping the copper out of the walls of the building we're in to go sell for scrap. They're the people who saw the iceberg, saw the Titanic hit the iceberg. Now they're stealing all the fine china and silverware and rushing to the lifeboats. They're extracting everything while the ship is sinking. It's why Rachel Maddow, she went from a daily show. Now she's doing a weekly show. A lot of people have pointed out, yeah, she's jumping ship. She doesn't want to be left holding the bag, so she's reducing her workload, taking a bigger paycheck. I can't remember who told us this. It might have been Bannon, that Jon Stewart shut his show down just before Trump came in because they all knew it was going to happen. And nobody wanted to be doing a nightly show where they're forced to lie. So they cancel it. And that's basically, I think, what we're going through right now is, like, you take a look at, you know, someone like Ian, who by any sane metric, a conservative would call a leftist, a liberal, or, you know, at the very least on the left. Yet people in media would say Ian's far right.
It's because I have long hair.
Well, I think that's a reason to make you far left.
People look at me and they make assumptions.
Yeah.
Well, we're trapped in this. You know, so I think ultimately what this brings us to is we're watching the country collapse. It's breaking apart. Portland announces they're banning trade with Texas. California says no travel to the other states. I'm like, yo, at this point, this is one by one, the bricks falling out of the building as the United States is crumbling down. And so long, I think the main issue is you've got people on the left who actively want that to happen. The Occupy Wall Street people, for instance, were like very much so wanting the U.S. to collapse. Antifa very clearly wants the U.S. to collapse. They all basically think this country is racist, 1619 Project, all that stuff. And one by one, our institutions are failing. And it's no surprise. The people in government are incentivized to extract as much as they can as the ship is falling apart. And what's the end result, I guess? We break apart?
That's what should have happened a long time ago. Mm. I mean, how do you... You have people who are like, okay, I literally want to be able to have a baby be born and punch a hole in its head and suck its brain out.
That was in Virginia.
Yeah. They literally want that to happen. How am I supposed to share air with them? How am I supposed to share a polity with them? Hmm. I mean, why should I be forced to? Why don't we just break up? And the hardest part is you have states where a state like Texas, okay, you have the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Dallas is insanely left. Fort Worth is right. So how do you do that? We have to come up with a way that people can be able to choose the kind of governance they want, because we're just going to be at war to the point where, oh, I don't know, people are burning cities down.
I think. You know, maybe if this continues, you might see left and right wing groups fighting in the streets.
Huh.
Or maybe shooting at each other. Oh, wait,
that's not
going to
be in right wing cities, though. That's all going to be in the left. Mm. Those cities need to be abandoned.
I was joking because it already happened.
Right.
This past weekend, there's been shootouts in Portland.
So I personally think that there needs to be a unifying principle around which people can gather in order to have a strong country, right? And you talked, I think you were right, that how the modern day right conservatives for the last 50 years have ceded our education system, entertainment, and the media to the left. And we're reaping the consequences of that today, right? And I think part of that is when you teach kids, you talk about this critical race theory stuff and certainly in college for a long time, it was happening in college where people or students were being taught to think this country was a horrible place, an evil place where everyone was racist. I grew up, you know, and was taught, you know, we judge people by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. Like, we read Martin Luther King, we ingested it, we believed it. But today, your child in a public school is being taught that they're either a victim or oppressor based on the color of their skin. They're taught to hate the other based on the color of their skin. And when that happens, I mean, you start to believe in a way, especially if you're a little one, right, that your country is a fundamentally evil, horrible place. And that's why we have such unbelievable group polarization in this country, because we've had one political party who has done nothing but divide us among age, race, demographic, you know, young, old, rich, poor, black, white, Christian, atheist, because that's how they maintain power, right? I have a different view, and you and I have talked about this on the show, or even debated about it a little bit, but I you know, maybe it's me being naive, but I believe that what makes America as exceptional is not necessarily our diversity. Now, diversity is great. Like, around this table, we have an unbelievable amount of diversity, and diversity of thought is great because it challenges us to think in different ways. But what makes this country exceptional is that for, you know, 200 years, we've put aside our petty differences, or done the best that we could in order to put aside our differences and united around the principle of being an American. Today, we don't have that anymore. And you see little fractures in every aspect of what we do in our education system, even in sports now, or political, right? I mean,
you know how we solve it? Sean Parnell does not run for Senate in U.S. Senate. He runs for mayor of his hometown. Oh. He runs for mayor of his hometown, and he gets people elected to the board who agree with him and say, we're not going to teach that crap here. The federal GOP is controlled opposition for the regime. We know that. Even Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader,
In the House.
He was, I'm a total Trumper until January 6th. And then he starts backing off. And then he starts going back. Look at what DeSantis is doing in Florida. Look at what Abbott is doing in Texas. If Sean Parnell ran for governor of Pennsylvania and ran on three things, you're not teaching that crap in schools. If you don't want a mask on your child, you're not going to have a mask. And if you don't want a needle stuck in your arm, you don't have to have a needle stuck in your arm. If you ran for governor of Pennsylvania on that, you would get elected. And you would do more for the people that you love in your home state than you would going to Washington, D.C. and getting stuck in that mess.
I don't disagree with what you're saying. I do think that there are many positive ways that you, especially if you're getting elected, and the idea that all politics is local, right? And like, we're seeing just in Pennsylvania alone, like, an unbelievably intense focus on school boards. We've never seen anything like the intensity that's around school board elections this year, right? But we're seeing that at every level, and mayor, governor. There's a gubernatorial election in Pennsylvania in 2022. And I would say 99% of the time I would agree with you, except for 2022. If we lose the state of Pennsylvania, which is a Republican, this seat, Senator Toomey is retiring. It's an open seat, so there's no incumbent there. It's been in Republican control for a while. If we lose the seat, and the Democrats, of course, know that there's no pathway to the Senate majority without flipping the seat in Pennsylvania. They have to do it if they want an actual majority. Then it almost doesn't matter if there's a Republican governor in Pennsylvania, because the feds, whether it's with H.R. 1, the For the People Act, or Senate Bill 1, which is basically a nationalization of our elections, the feds are taking away power from the states at a rate that has never been seen before in American history. And the critical fight for me is in the Senate to stop the radical left from packing the Supreme Court, from nuking the filibuster, to making Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico a state. It doesn't matter if there's a Republican governor in Pennsylvania. Of course, it does. Of course it does. I'd rather see a Republican there than a radical leftist. But I'm saying I don't want to see states stripped of their power. And the left today will absolutely do that. They're not shy about their agenda. And for me, so I see not only is leadership important, less political party to me, and leadership is actually what really matters. But winning the seat in Pennsylvania, defending Pennsylvania, but also defending the country against being a hedge against just the insane radicalism of the new Democratic Party, and not allowing them to fundamentally transform this country into something that we've never recognized before.
I think you actually, you know, what you're saying is another reason he could win the Senate. If you campaign on the same things at the state level, not, you know, the kids, your schools, school boards, you know, choosing to get vaccinated or whatever.
School choice is something that is unbelievably important. And so I think COVID and these insane lockdowns have shown us this, something that crosses, you know, socioeconomic strata. It's important in the inner city. It's important in the rural community, especially in Pennsylvania, where broadband is a real issue. When schools closed and we went virtual, there were kids in the inner city that didn't have a laptop computer to get on the internet or didn't have access to the internet. You had kids in rural communities who were climbing to the tops of their silos in the hopes that they could get on the internet in the Starbucks across town because they didn't have broadband internet. They had no internet whatsoever. So you're right. There are those very same issues. Like I'm vehemently opposed to vaccine mandates. I will say that, like, as you mentioned, if you want the vaccine, consult with your doctor. By all means, get the vaccine, but let no government mandate it. I think
the government doesn't know your personal life. They don't know your personal finances. They don't know the struggles you go through. And this tends to be, and Republicans do this, like you mentioned, the federal GOP is just opposition, controlled opposition. They do these blanket policies that don't make sense for localities. So there one thing I think people definitely need to pay attention to is, you mentioned school boards are really important.
They're so important.
I will say too, I think you're correct. They need a better governor in Pennsylvania.
That's
John would be a great governor, but if Sean is going to get that Senate seat and it's going to have a big impact at the federal level, even if the federal GOP is controlled opposition, I think that's actually a good argument for why more honest individuals should be running and displacing them.
This is why I want.
I think DeSantis has done more to protect his constituency than probably any politician in my lifetime.
You're 100%. You're 100% right.
And he's doing that at the governor level while he's being attacked. And he's just middle fingering.
This is the point that I wanted to make. And I, by the way, you're right. I think Ron DeSantis has done an incredible job in Florida. You're right. All my life, I have wondered why Republicans haven't fought harder, right? And I think there's a lot of reasons why. Like, I think a lot of Republicans don't want the media attention. They don't want to have to fight the media and the Democrats, a lot of that. But what Trump taught the Republican Party, and certainly this next wave of sort of Republican blue collar working, see the Republican Party as the party of the working class, individual freedom and liberty, small federal government, all the same stuff. But Trump taught this next generation of Republicans how to fight, and that the cultural fight is also important and it cannot simply be discarded.
Hey, some of us have been trying to teach libertarians that too.
I do think that we can change the whole uniparty, because there are times where I'm so frustrated at how the Republican Party operates. But the only way you change it is to get involved and be the change that you hope to see. But that's why we can stop the insanity. You're talking about the USA and empire in decline, America in decline, or late stage collapse. I don't buy that. I think that good, strong leadership can change it. But if we win Pennsylvania, we can stop the insanity of the radical left that all rests on Pennsylvania. I'm telling you that we can stop them from doing what they're doing to this country. And that's why Pennsylvania is so important. And that's why the radical left and people like Chuck Schumer were running ads against me 2 weeks before I was even a candidate, because they know how important it is.
I look at some of this news, man, and I genuinely believe.
I just had a video taken off of YouTube.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just right now?
Yeah. I just got an email.
Oh, wow. Is it a hard strike or?
Episode I dropped today violates medical misinformation policy.
There it is.
That's what's going right now.
I feel like it really is a battle between good and evil. And I think many of these establishment cultists think it's a battle of good and evil too. And I think they're wrong about that because they're in a cult. They come out and they say, oh, all Trump supporters are in cults. These people who are, you know, eating horse paste, they're all insane. And the stories are often fake. I mean, they're often fake with the story about Oklahoma being overrun with, you know, gunshot victims couldn't get beds.
Oh, right.
Like,
totally fake story. Totally fake story.
Yeah, we have a story from TimCast.com about Jimmy Kimmel. Kimmel says unvaccinated Americans taking ivermectin should be left to die if they get sick. Actually, we'll break that apart. He actually said that if someone comes in who's unvaccinated eating horse goo, rest in peace, Wheezy. And then he said, we still got a lot of Pam Dimwits out here. People are still taking this ivermectin. The poison control centers have seen the spike in calls from people taking livestock medicine to fight the coronavirus, but they won't take the vaccine. It's like you're a vegan and you're like, no, I don't want a hamburger. Give me that Alpo instead. One of the reasons these sea biscuits are opting for ivermectin is because they don't trust Big Pharma, which is fine, I guess, except for the fact that ivermectin is made by Merck, which is the fourth largest pharmaceutical company in the world, and even Merck is telling people to cut it out. So I'm not here to get into the medical debate with Jimmy Kimmel. I'm here to talk about the overt callousness. Mm. There was another story I saw from this mainstream journalist who said, we need to stop shaming people who are doing things we don't like. And the reason was, she said, when these stories, like with Jimmy Kimmel, come out, when the Oklahoma story comes out, her dad turns it off and stops listening, saying, this is negative, it's lies, it's manipulation, I don't want to hear it anymore. So they outright don't trust the media. They don't trust Big Pharma. I think it's a fair point to say we shouldn't, like, the fact that he's like, rest in peace, Wheezy, that's insane. That's like a dark thing to say about mm-hmm. someone. How about, what if he said this? Rest in peace, fatty. Oh, what's that? You had a heart attack and you're overweight? Too bad. No, we don't do that. We say we're going to try and save you.
Well, we don't do this. We don't do this with the flu. Mm. You know?
Yeah, I mean, people have a choice to get flu shots. I understand they're different.
It's different, but you don't shame people for getting sick. And it's almost like it's the reason why it's so dark is you said he's callous about it. He's almost wishing for it to happen. And that's just so wrong.
I'm really angry, man. I just got to say, the media is the most destructive, vile, and disgusting entity in this country. And I mean the corporate press, because when they come out with this stupid BS about Oklahoma call centers and CNN says livestock, you get people so distrustful of our institutions, they literally go to Tractor Supply instead. That's your fault, Jimmy Kimmel. That's your fault, Aaron Burnett. If you people weren't so despicable, maybe people might actually say, you know what? The vaccine, my doctor says, is a good idea. Instead, now they're like people messaging me saying they don't even trust their own doctors anymore. And I'm like, well, look, I understand being mad at the mainstream media and people like Jimmy Kimmel being vile, disgusting, despicable people. But yo, to then turn around and say, I'm going to distrust all institutions. This is the problem I have. I don't blame the regular working class person. I don't blame the regular person who's confused by this. I blame these vile people like Aaron Burnett who come out and say Joe Rogan's eating livestock medication, which is a absolute lie. I'm almost swearing on this one because this is why I'm reading this story. I'm reading this quote from Jimmy Kimmel and I'm like, isn't it crazy that there are people willing to go to Tractor Supply instead of going to a doctor? That's your fault, CNN. That's your fault, Aaron Burnett. That's your fault, Jimmy Kimmel.
Is Jimmy Kimmel, is that monologue, is that on YouTube right now?
Oh, probably.
Because this is the point that I was making about. So Jimmy Kimmel can go on to YouTube and advocate for violence and death against a certain group of people, and that's fine.
And this is what breeds distrust and the contempt and the anger.
What about on Twitter? You have people saying, oh, if people aren't vaccinated and they get the coronavirus, they shouldn't be hospitalized. So what they're basically saying is that people who decide that they're going to ignore what the professionals say and go out and maybe contract the virus shouldn't get medical advice. Wow. I wonder if somebody would have said that in the 80s during the HIV.
Mm-hmm. It's just a horrible thing to do or say about anybody.
During the AIDS thing.
It's just a horrible thing to do or say about anybody. And
you want to be for universal healthcare and think healthcare is a human right? Tell Jimmy Kimmel to go shove it. Because if you're one of these Bernie Sanders supporting progressive socialists and you think healthcare is a human right, then it doesn't matter if you're overweight. Then it doesn't matter if you're, I don't know, you eat Legos. Are we going to, if some guy sticks a fork in an outlet, don't do that. Are we going to be like, no, it's his fault. He chose to do it. We're going to be like, this man needs help. Save him. These people are evil. They're evil. They're the ones who go on TV and mock. Here's my favorite example. Donald Trump ordering a well-done steak with ketchup. Brilliant move. Trump's a smart guy.
Legend.
You remember this?
Straight legend. Yes.
Do you remember this? When Donald Trump ordered a well-done steak with ketchup.
Oh, yeah.
You know why that was a masterstroke, a genius maneuver? It's 4D chess, baby. Because the media came out and made fun of him for doing it. They made fun of him for having this fancy steak well done with ketchup. Ha ha, what a moron. And then regular people who aren't wealthy, who can't afford filet mignon, said, I get my steaks from the local supermarket, from the Save-On or whatever, and I put ketchup on it. Trump was more relatable.
One of the greatest gifts that he gave this country, and I think so many of his policies were just so good for the country, but is the fact that he did expose the media for who they really were. I mean, there was always sort of like a veneer, like of maybe, maybe not. Well, there's a liberal bias, but Trump exposed them for just exactly who they are. And they've never quite recovered. Well, they've never recovered at all. The media has almost no credibility anymore.
You were mentioning politicians getting bullied by the press. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Fauci. Fauci is talking on some show. I can't remember. It was Samantha Guthrie or something. And he was asked about, well, if one mask works, why not two masks? And he says, yeah, it's just common sense to wear two masks. and then he comes out later on TV and says, no, there's no guidance saying to wear two masks. Then the CDC later comes out and says, wear two masks. Because it is true also that there are people in government who are pressured by the media. I don't think there's a grand conspiracy. I certainly think there's interests in government and corporations that have influence and affect things. What I think is happening is we are a country of, I'll be careful, we are a country of a large number of cowards, absolute cowards. And so that means when the crackpots say stupid things, regular people say, leave me alone. I don't want to get involved.
We talked about institutions not being trusted in this. So did you see the story that broke today? The CDC tightened masking guidelines after threats from teachers' union.
Yep.
Yeah.
This is why everything is political. The radical left has penetrated institutions to the point where average people don't trust our institutions anymore.
The system
and
is
for
broken.
Good reason. Right. And so I think Trump exposed a lot of that. And I think ultimately that it makes our country in the long haul. I think it makes our country a better place, because the hope is that people will start thinking critically again.
But we need to start mitigating the fact that the left is in charge. I mean, and I really honestly believe the only way that you can do that is to, without bringing secession into it, how about local politics? I mean, really make local politics more important. Like, so gun laws, I don't think there should be any gun laws. I think the Second Amendment is, you know, and I
agreed.
I catch crap for this because I don't know about constitutional gun laws, according to somebody. And, but so what did Texas just do? Texas just said that if a suppressor is made in Texas, you can go in and you can buy it without your $200 NFA tax stamp. Well, the reason they can do that is because they tell the Texas Rangers, they tell local police that if the ATF comes in, don't coordinate with them.
Right.
Don't give them any cooperation. That's what small towns should be doing.
Yep. And
small
so
small towns should be like, I mean,
the ATF defense, then doesn't know who has it.
And then there's the fact that my friend Michael Bolden from the 10th Amendment Center looked and said, like, in 2014, the ATF, the DEA did not have the budget to bust every dispensary in Los Angeles County once.
Wow. Hmm.
So they don't have the kind of budget that we think that they have. So I think local politics is just really the way forward. And I think that's what's going to mitigate all this left craziness. I mean, if you're in a right town, if you're in a town that leans right, talk to your neighbor about it. I'm moving to a smaller town. I got to talk to neighbors like the second day I was there, and that was better than anything I had done in Atlanta in 15 years. And you should be organizing, and you should be talking to people about how – talking to the police. I mean, the problem with the police – I mean, I think there's a big problem with the police in this country. They just have too much to do. There's just too many things for them to do. I mean, they should be investigating crimes. I think the numbers are that they show up to stop a crime less than 5% of the time. So they're basically investigators. So make them investigators. Make them the best investigators possible.
I think you're so right about the local politics. And it's something that the left has understood for a long time now. And they will actually recruit county commissioner candidates and move them to states where they think that they can win. And you have people like very, very wealthy leftists, and they rolled out their digital fundraising platform in Act Blue far before conservatives had our own response in WinRed. There's essentially the exact same platform, except for there's an algorithm base. It's sort of like the Netflix of giving. If you like this guy, you might like this guy. And as you get more donors, you have a bigger Rolodex. You can raise more money and raise it faster. Well, the left has a big head start on Republicans in that regard. Mm-hmm. But the left has understood for a very long time that you've got to organize all the time. You can't stop. You can't just organize for an election and then everybody goes home. And this is something that I've been working really hard at in Pennsylvania, is telling people that, hey, we have to organize all the time. Because the number one thing that I get on campaign is, what can I do? You know, I'm just one person. I'm like, well, that's enough. Like, get out there, bring people together and organize and advocate for the things that you believe in. Get behind candidates. It might not even be me, but get behind candidates that you believe in. Help them make phone calls. Help them knock doors. Talk to your neighbors. Talk to the police. Get involved at the local level. Organize 24/7, because that's what the left does. And that's the pathway to victory. That's how we save this country.
There's a dude in New York. He put up a video where he's going around with these flyers to say, we do not discriminate on race, creed, vaccine or unvaccinated. We welcome all. And he says a bunch of stores agreed to put the signs up. And so he just went out, and now all these businesses are saying, like, we're not going to adhere to this mandate.
One person.
One guy. Amazing. And so I'm like, amazing. People in New York should be doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
so
great.
Yeah, people in New York should be.
I didn't hear this. That's cool.
Yep, yep. So I tweeted him out, and I included his handle. I don't have it pulled up otherwise. You know, but you can go to my Twitter at TimCast, and then you can see the video he made. And he's just some dude. He doesn't have a big account. He's not some prominent activist. He like made the video. He put it up on TikTok and Twitter. Someone tweeted it. I saw it. I retweeted it. I told people in New York, get active. If you have a problem with what's going on, you can't just sit back and ignore it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And that's what we've been working on in Pennsylvania. And I think it's working. I really do think that 2022, I mean, first of all, we've got to win in 2021. I mean, you talked about, like, there's not going to be, like, if, you know, the left doesn't fear an Antifa-type response from the right. And yeah. I think, by and large, I think that's a good thing. Like, the right is, like, we're law and order. We believe in that. And I think that's a good thing. But you see it, like, we have our judicial races in Pennsylvania. We elect judges in Pennsylvania for some reason. I'm not sure quite how I feel about that. I don't like that. Because there's really no state contribution limit, right? So you can have like one super rich billionaire be like, well, here's $1 million, go win your judge race. Now all of a sudden, as if you're a leftist, you mm-hmm. like almost all leftist judges legislate from the bench. They don't follow the Constitution, they just legislate from the bench. And so, well, anyway, we got to win in 2021, but I think we're going to. I think we're going to, because we, you know, in 2021, we won the ballot referendums in Pennsylvania that curbed Governor Wolf's unilateral authority to declare emergencies, because he just like kept extending COVID emergencies like in perpetuity. Right. Well, we won that as Republicans by 139,000 votes. So I think that people are waking up to this. I really do. And I'm saying all this to say it's not just a feeling. I see it empirically as well. And I think going into 2022 with Biden is just, he just destroys everything that he touches. I think people see it. And
California will be interesting whether Newsom gets recalled, because, you know, 538 saying that he's favored now. A bunch of polls come out saying, oh, it's over for the recall effort. You know, he won. We'll see. There's one dude, Colin Moriarty, posted a photo he got in Virginia of a California recall ballot. In Virginia.
What?
How do you accidentally mail outside of your state for your own state's gubernatorial election? Whatever. But I think we'll see, because I think a lot of Democrats don't like him. There's a lot of Democrats in California probably like, enough
they're
with this corruption.
They're business owners. They're business owners, and they watch their business collapse because of ridiculous government mandates. I mean, I think that – what, California, have they even lifted their lockdown yet? Did they ever officially lift their lockdown?
Remember that video of that woman who had the restaurant? And she said,
outside, right?
I'm not allowed to have an outdoor seating area, but right next to it is the craft services for a movie production.
Yes.
And they're allowed to do this?
Yes. It's insane.
The rich get richer.
The government in the last year made people close their businesses, stay home. They actually made their loved ones die alone. And people listened. This is a huge problem. This is a real issue.
And if
issue.
You bring that up, people don't care. Leftists don't care.
Let's
face it. I mean, the left is the one who has bought into this COVID religion. And they don't care. If you bring that up, then you're just, well, it's like they were going to die anyway. I mean, and we have another problem in this country with warehousing our old, you know, warehousing our grandparents instead of having three generation households like my family does in Puerto Rico.
It's actually a really interesting point. I do think that the breakdown of the family unit in this country and even neighborhoods, like when I grew up, we had a neighborhood. We would talk to our neighbors. We'd go out and play in the cul-de-sac with friends. And I just feel like that doesn't exist anymore. People were more insular.
Then the restrictions and the lockdowns are a good thing, aren't they? What are we seeing more of? The Great Resignation. The job openings are not due to people necessarily getting free money. A lot of people have decided with unemployment, they're like, why would I look for work? So I think we're going to see a lot of jobs get filled now that the unemployment benefits are over. But a lot of people have been resigning. 11 million in 3 months from April to July, or from April to June. And why is that? Because they don't want to do these jobs anymore. They've been given a taste of remote work. What does that mean? When you work remote, you see your kids. You wake up, you see your kids, you see them off to school, you pick them up, you bring them home, you hang out with them. I think a lot of people realize they like doing that. So now you're hearing a lot of stories about people saying, I don't want to go back to the office. If they don't let me work remote, I'll quit. And so businesses that can have remote are now doing this. Take a look at what's happening in schools. Parents are getting fed up with schools. Well, if you work remote, you don't need a babysitter and you don't need your kid to be in the school. You can do a pod where you're, 10 families put all their kids together and then hire a teacher together. It's super cheap per family. And then you have one teacher teaching all these different subjects. That's, I think, is going to restore a lot of family and community. And whether it's on purpose or not, I think you're going to start seeing a return to a lot of family values, parents teaching their kids. I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel here.
I agree. I hate to even speak about it this way because people were paying more attention because of the pandemic and the lockdowns. They're paying more attention to what their kids are learning in school. And I think that's why you see just such intense passion around these school board races, because yes, parents are finally like, wait a second, what the heck is this stuff? And so they're involved now. They're fired up. I mean, every week we see some viral video of a parent at a school board meeting telling the board members what for and getting their mics cut and stuff. So that is certainly a good thing. And I do think that teachers unions now, when 9/11 happened and I joined the military, I was an elementary education major. I was trying to figure out how I was going to student teach second grade. It's something that I think I have tons of respect for teachers, but the teachers unions, I think most people see them today for what they are, and they're putting the bureaucratic needs of their union before the educational needs of the student. And I think more people today, the whole pod concept that you talked about is kind of interesting. It's fascinating. But school choice is something that matters to people,
But I think people are going to want their kids to be home.
Whoa.
Thunder.
Thunderstorm. Nice. That's crazy. Yeah. Anyway, we should go to Super Chats. If you haven't already, smash the like button. Go to timcast.com, become a member. We're going to have a members-only segment coming up, which should be live around 11 or so p.m. And like I said, smash the like button, subscribe to the channel. Smash that like button for Ian.
I don't hear you. There it is.
I don't know if we
Thanks.
Can hear.
We got some good ones. Make 1984 Fiction Again says, out of curiosity, Ian, how do you feel about Governor Northam's position on abortion? Keep the baby comfortable in a bassinet while mom and doc decide.
I have no idea. I don't know anything about it.
So he was doing a radio interview, and he said that when it comes to abortion, the baby could be delivered, placed aside, and then the mother and the doctor could go into the other room and make a decision about what to do with the baby.
What, like a full-term baby?
Yeah, like born. Birth.
Yeah, that's too much.
Born, yeah.
Once brain activity starts to work, you're looking at a human, so that's...
Did you hear what about the story? I mean,
let me ask. So, like, if somebody's, 35-year-old dad walking down the street, slips on a banana peel and hits his head, and then he's in a coma, and they're like, we're not getting any brain activity, but he's just in a coma. I mean, maybe he could come out of it. Is he not a human anymore? He could just pull the plug?
Well, that's up to the person if they want to pull the plug at that point.
But do you think they should be legally allowed to just terminate?
I think they should. If someone is irreconcilably in a coma, according to modern medicine, they're like, there's zero hope, we have no hope that they'll ever come out, then yeah,
well, you have the right. We don't know that. What if they're like, we don't know, so we're not getting any brand activity. I mean, it's possible he could come to and come back.
I think, well, I mean, I don't know what the law is, but personally, I would wait out for hope. But it, I mean, if it was costing me $40,000 a day, maybe, like, what's money? What's more valuable?
It's the challenge of saying that brain activity is the determinant factor in life.
Yeah.
In a baby formation. In a modern human, if someone's brain gets knocked out, I mean, they're gone. Basically, yeah, they're a husk.
Do you see the challenge there, though? You're defining a person based on memories.
But what are you other than your frontal lobe, your Tim Pool, your self, you know, your ego? If that's stripped from you, then what?
So then the government should have right to chop your arm
the
off.
Government?
The government.
Oh, just to destroy a dead body?
No. If all you are is corpse? Your memories and the rest of your body is, as long as you're alive, damage to your body is fine, right?
Wait, say that again. As long as you're alive?
If you're defining life as a collection of memories and brain activity, then why should you have any bodily government protections
It's still life. It's still living. Like, your muscle is a living muscle. It just doesn't have any human in it.
So it would be okay for a doctor to cut your arm off?
No.
Totally. Why not?
What kind of question is that? Why would you ever advocate to have someone cut your arm off?
People do it all the time. It's called body dysmorphia.
Yeah, it's a dysmorphic behavior. It's not real. Right. It's not good. No, it's bad.
Well, so now you're starting to set arbitrary morality on when you can and can't terminate life and what constitutes life.
I'm not sure. I don't agree with you that it's arbitrary. I'm talking about babies. Yeah. Brain activity in fetuses, developing fetuses, as different than someone falling and hitting their head.
So, like, if a baby is born and it's not functioning or learning, you think they could? So that's Northam's position, to be honest. Northam was talking about, like, he's talking about severe abnormality. A baby is born and then they're like, hey, wait a minute, this baby's brain's not working. So they could take a fully birthed baby when the brain isn't working properly and say,
like, a brain dead? Brain dead?
No, like, the baby's alive.
So, like, autistic or some sort of, like,
limited brain function.
Baby. Yeah.
I don't think limited brain function constitutes brain dead. So no, that's different to me.
So, like, what if the baby has no functioning brain capacity other than just, like, it's breathing?
Then it's not,
so you agree with Northam's position.
Yeah, if it's like, if you have a brain dead baby coming out of the woman and you want to abort that thing, then yeah, it's not a human at that point.
But it has no brain. It's breathing.
Well, if it's moving around, then it has brain activity. I mean, it could be.
That's not necessarily true.
It might
true.
Just be. Yeah, you're right. What kind of life is? What would you ever wish on someone to experience that?
The issue is the assumptions made about what Northam was talking about, and you can take it two ways. One, that he was saying in any circumstance, a baby could be born and the mother could decide, which technically would be the case. Or you can be more generous and say he was referring to severe abnormality, in which case, even in his position, sounds like you would agree. I believe there are no circumstances in which a baby born that is alive should be executed.
With no brain, like with a complete brain dead?
Even with no brain.
Just like,
yeah, because I have friends who have siblings who are, like, severely autistic to the point of, like, inability to live, and they love them and they're happy that they're part of their families. Yeah. And it's like, babies.
Absolutely.
So that's like,
but brain dead, that's another situation. When a body just lays there with a pipe down its throat and on a breathing apparatus.
I'm not saying that.
From age, that's there, like, you, brain dead child.
But you're saying a collection of your memories and your frontal lobe. There could be no higher function and the body could still be breathing and functioning. And I have friends who have family members who they have feeding tubes. And don't you dare, I dare you go to them and say they should have executed that baby.
Well, I wouldn't never say should. I'm saying you should have the right to do that.
And you'll get punched in the face.
They should have the right.
But there are certainly families that agree with you and, like, I wish this child was never born. It's a burden on my life.
You know, it's
like,
not up to me to decide for someone else about what to do with their child or their loved one if something happens to the brain. But I think that if a brain dead animal lays before you, that maybe we should consider having the right to destroy that animal for the betterment of society.
Oh, humans and animals are different.
Well, humans are animals.
But I think this was a good conversation so far. This is a good super chat because it allows us to talk about the deeper questions over.
Like, what do you guys think about it?
I'm pro-life.
Yeah, I'm pro-life. I'm pro-life. And when people start talking about what decisions should be made, I think about the fact that Iceland doesn't have a Down syndrome problem.
Yep.
Like, they don't have a lot of Down syndrome, children with Down syndrome?
Yeah, because they kill them in utero.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and it's, you know, yeah. what I think I mentioned
and
the worst
and the government
part
forces
it.
Them to do it.
Yeah, and the
forces.
Worst, yeah.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
absolutely
it's government it's, mandated.
It's horrific.
Yeah, the worst part about it is that 1 in 5 babies who are diagnosed with Down syndrome are not diagnosed correctly, which means that mm-hmm. 1 in 5 babies who are aborted in Iceland could be perfectly fine.
And so therein lies the problem. Let's say there's a baby in the womb and they're like, well, we're not detecting brain activity. And then you're like, all right, terminate. And they were wrong. It's the same argument of the death penalty that whatever the percentage is that someone could be innocent, I can't.
But
I believe it is better that 100 guilty persons escape than Ben Franklin.
I agree with that.
Suffer.
But brain misdiagnosing autism is different than misdiagnosing brain dead. So I don't know if that's – do people misdiagnose brain dead?
The doctors make mistakes all the time, right?
Yeah.
And that's not to say don't trust your doctor. I'm saying, well, pencils have erasers and doctors have
liability. Don't rush to a decision like that.
Yeah. I just thought this was a good question because it's not so simple for a lot of people to just – be like a lot of people take a simplistic view of it. Like, why would you ever terminate a baby? And I'm like, I'm sure there's somebody who's looking at a baby with such severe deformities it might only live for a month. And that's a really difficult question then, right? But I think the challenge is if a woman gives birth to a baby and you start creating exemptions for when you're allowed to literally end the life of a born baby that's alive, it's like, yo, you're dancing on a slippery slope right now. And I don't want to start talking about where that goes. Because I'll tell you, safe, legal, and rare 15 years ago turned into celebrate and your abortion with that comedian on Netflix.
Shout your abortion.
Yeah, shout your abortion. Let's read some more, though. Clarence Games says, Sean Parnell, are you going to run for federal Senate of PA since Pat Toomey isn't running?
Yes, I'm running for it now.
Ooh.
Yes, I need your help.
Endorsed by Trump.
Oh, my gosh. how do we not talk about this? Yeah, just recently endorsed by Trump. It was amazing. But, yeah, we're going to win. We're gonna win the primary and we're going to win the general for sure.
Tyler 223 says, Metallica shirt. He has my vote.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Metallica, Metallica is underrated, and I sort of grew up listening to Metallica.
Underrated.
Black album?
Well, no, well, see, like the black, the most, I like Injustice for, I like Injustice for All. Like, I like stuff pre-black album.
Yeah, but Ride the Lightning's incredible.
It is amazing, but I Master of Puppets is amazing too, but I of course, I like the black album. But then there was that weird Fuel phase where they cut their hair and got earrings and stuff.
Load.
But I'm just gonna go out on a limb and say that they were delightful then too.
I gotta ask.
They were great.
You're running for office, and you're not wearing a suit. You're wearing a Metallica t-shirt. I have to wonder if there's some like highly paid consultant who's like, Sean, listen, you go on the show, you want to relate to working class people, wear a Metallica shirt.
You know, I don't fit the mold of a typical politician. I just don't. There are people out there that are critical of me for what I wear. But you know what? I am who I am, and that's just it. And I dress appropriately. When I spoke at the convention, I wore a suit. Wear suits when I need to. But
have you ever seen that movie?
Let me just say that. When do you ever see a politician in campaign season? Do they wear a business suit in the commercials that they run?
Not usually.
Don't, why?
Don't they wear like polos and khakis?
I don't do that either. But my point is that there's a reason why when they're running ads in their district, they're not wearing a 3-piece suit. It's because it's not.
Have you ever seen The Adjustment Bureau? I think it's called the movie.
Yes. That's a good one.
So it's basically in the beginning, he's running for Congress, I guess, and then he just has this moment of clarity where he's like, "This tie was picked for me by a consultant. These shoes are the perfect amount of scuffed. We didn't want to look like slobs, but we didn't want to offend the working class." And then everyone loves it, and then he ends up running again. But the movie's about
ask my consultants about working with me as a kid. I kind of just sort of do my thing.
They're like, wear a Nickelback shirt. And you're like, that's wrong. That's bad advice.
That is too much.
All right, let's read some more.
I can't. That's a bridge too far.
Yeah,
Nickelback
is
a bridge too far.
But you'll get the Nickelback vote.
Canadian vote?
In Pennsylvania, maybe mail-in ballots. I don't know.
Gone Fall says, Larry the Chad Elder for Gov. Mm-hmm. That's right. Michael Fernando says, great work, Timcast crew. Important topics and interesting guests. Did y'all see Ron Paul's video about the great unraveling? Not feeling very good about the future of the U.S. and the world. Freedom must win. I haven't. I will check it out. That's interesting. Little Bear says, Tim Pool, I don't give legal advice. Also, Tim Pool, Joe Rogan should sue CNN. New Zealand. I'll answer that. New Zealand, we're banning knives. Evan, DMT, the Fed, like and share. What I mean by specifically advice is like specific tactics. So when someone comes on the show and they're like, look, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not giving legal advice. But if you look at the law in this section and file on this and this, this, they're not saying like, man, sue them, sue them. Like, that's a very, very blunt thing. Like, I'll say, sue them. I'll say, go to a doctor and figure out what you need to help yourself and go to a financial advisor. Saying sue them is more on par with like, go to a lawyer and challenge them. I'm not saying that Joe should specifically use certain legal tactics or that I am giving him advice on how he should file his paperwork and what he should claim. That's a little different. But admittedly, legal, financial, medical device are all very different things, and there's probably different thresholds, but, you know, that being said. All right, let's see what we got here. A lot of people saying Larry the Chad Elder. Appreciate the super chats. Nemo Sundry says, I work in youth and housing nonprofit programs. An entire dependence victimhood culture is consuming the industry. I've been targeted and ostracized by social justice, going public, exposing the crisis. Real empowerment equals self-determination theory. Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. Marlino TK says, I think Rogan should sue to help validate some potential uses of the so-called horse dewormer. Maybe it would provoke more trials and research. Oh. I think Larry should sue. I think Joe Rogan should sue because they lied about him. As to whether or not he has a case, I don't know. I can't advise him on that.
I think you just sue to punish a journalist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you just take every chance you can to take a scalp with these people.
Yeah, I mean, Joe certainly has the resources to do a legal carpet bomb.
And there's no accountability for the false stuff that they push ever. They can push these false stories. They don't get banned. They hurt people in some cases. And the news cycle changes and no one's ever held accountable.
Yep.
So if you want media to change, you have to go at them when they commit grievous wrongs.
Kyle Miller says, Sean, did Trump give you his secret to looking younger now?
Oh!
Usually people age 20 years after being the president.
I think we need to address this, right? So the picture that I took with President Trump has generated some controversy on the internet. I've gotten, that's a body double, or that's not really Trump, or the president had plastic surgery. Look, I don't
know. Instagram filters.
Well, maybe there was
like photoshopping.
Maybe there was a little face tuning going on. I don't know. It was a good. Yeah. So, my people were saying it's a good pick, but anyway, I met President Trump and I, and this was a few weeks ago, and I thought he looks so good. He looks like he lost 50 pounds. Mm-hmm. He looks in the best shape of his life. And that is. We're making this news here. That is a real picture of President Trump. He looks fantastic. He looks like he's in really good shape.
But is he doing that so that he can be healthy for 2024?
I'm a betting man, he's running in 2024. Yeah, this is unofficial. I don't know. President Trump never told me anything, but like he is very, very fired up about, he's got so many awesome things, working, and he's planning, and he's laser focused on, he's laser focused on taking back the House and the Senate. And we just got his endorsement the other day. And that is it's a game changer, because even in the state of Pennsylvania, and there are a lot of people say, Pennsylvania is a tough spot. President Trump was the most popular Republican president in the history of Pennsylvania. That's just by the numbers. Mm-hmm. And so, he still has an unbelievable amount of support there, but yes, real picture. It was a real picture.
Chance Jones with a question for Sean. What's your opinion on Afghanistan? And if you get elected in the Senate, will you actually do anything or tell us what your goals are?
Well, how much time do you have on Afghanistan? Well, I think Afghanistan is a wholly preventable tragedy. I support, after 20 years of war there, I support drawing down in Afghanistan. I mean, I'm 40. I turned 40 in July. We've been at war in that country for half of my life. It was time to come. I was wounded there, lost a lot of my friends in that country, probably over 40 people that were very close friends of mine that I've lost in that country. And so, my number one promise to the people of Pennsylvania is that I am not I hate war. I've seen it up close and personal, and I hate it. I think that America's sons and daughters are our most precious natural resource. And by God, if we're going to send them into the fight, and sometimes that is necessary because freedom is worth fighting for and worth dying for. And sometimes our country is threatened. But by God, there's better be a clear-cut mission and clear-cut end state, because what happened in Afghanistan, 20 years of blood and treasure sacrificed in that country, only to have Joe Biden throw it all away in 8 months with just a botched withdrawal plan. Didn't have to be this way.
Mm. Boomchuck says, Tim, you spent the last few years telling everyone not to confront the left or to resort to the left's violent tactics. Don't call us cowards now. That is an absolute false statement of fact. Okay. I've consistently said, stand up, speak up, and challenge all of this stuff. But I've specifically said violence doesn't work, because it'll just be used against you because, well, for one, you're fighting uphill. Peaceful, persuasive, resourceful, gaining control of institutions, getting the right jobs. How many people on the right are applying at the New York Times? Get a job at the New York Times. There you go. Go apply. Go apply for a job there. Go apply to seriously, everybody right now, pick your media company. Gawker just restarted. Everybody apply. You live in New York and you're not woke? Well, apply for the job. Don't come out and start screaming MAGA 2024 when they're hiring you, but you get these jobs. You understand the place you work, and you roll with the punches, and then slowly start, you know, being friends with people and influencing people, and there you go. Gain the edge like they gained in the institutions. We'll do the same thing back. All right, let's grab some of these. Oh, what's this? All right, let's see where we're at. We'll try and find a good one. Sean Bachman says, Texas abortion law. Would it be possible to bipartisan pro-life legislation through that bans the death penalty and abortion?
Oh, great question.
Is it possible?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. The left would never go for that. The left is so radically pro-abortion today that they refuse to vote for the Born Alive Act that would protect babies that were born alive.
Do they even care about the death penalty anymore?
Right.
Is that even an issue that may, I don't know.
There's an interesting paradox with the left. They claim the death penalty is wrong, but they're in favor of abortion, and they can't define when life begins. It's always different. You ask most people on the left will give you various answers. They can't define when life begins. I think, like Ian, you mentioned, it was brain activity.
Yeah, something like that. First trimester-ish.
But I think that literally makes no sense. You know, life begins at conception. When we have a
human life is when the brain. I think that it's a living husk of meat, and then eventually we become a human, and then that's my.
I don't know that the science supports that. By the way, I threw up in my mouth a little bit when it says the science supports that, because I think it's just that term, trust the science, is like so overused. But, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that at conception, it's a human life.
Well, the zygote is indistinguishable from other animal zygotes, and only through evolution or through growth does it start to form.
It's only life if you find that on Mars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if we have cells in a petri dish, it's life. If we have, and there's restrictions on like certain things you can do. And if you have like a fertilized chicken egg, for instance, it's living.
Have you seen the March for Life this year? This year, right? There were more young people there than I'd ever seen before in my life, and I think the reason for that is that the science is on our side.
I think
it's pretty clear now that. At conception is the moment where human life.
But I think that it's inevitably going to continue. And if we try to make it illegal, we'll create a bunch of criminals. That's one of my big fears about legislating it.
Mm. So we got Janet West says, Tim, the puzzle piece you're missing is that it's not uncommon for doctors to prescribe off-label drugs as long as FDA approved and safe. I'm not missing that puzzle piece. I think it's actually very simple, and that's why I'm telling people to go to their doctors. The weirdest thing to me is that people are like, yes, but my doctor, you know, can prescribe things off-label. I'm like, then why are you saying, like, why? What's your concern with me saying, I don't know, I don't agree, but your doctor will make the decision you know what I mean? Like, if it seems like people genuinely believe doctors will only tell them a mainstream narrative, when we've literally had guests on the show who have talked about how their doctors advise them to or not to get the vaccine.
We've had doctors on the show that have been talked about mainstream.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Lots of them. And so I'm just like, I understand there's off-label prescriptions. That's why when Joe Rogan talks about what he was prescribed, I'm like, hey, that's between Joe and his doctor. Don't look at me. I'm not a doctor. Go talk to Joe's doctor if you're concerned, right? All right, let's see what we got. All right, let's see. Stephen Marsh says, this is for Ian. I think the best way to describe rights is that they come from natural instinct. You have the right to self-defense because it's human instinct to do so when attacked. And other example I don't have room for. I don't agree with that. I think that's poorly put. But Ian doesn't believe in rights.
That's not true.
Well, yeah, it is. What do you mean?
No, I mean, I think the way we derive our rights is up for debate. You know, in the Constitution, it says that they come from God. I feel like they come from the barrel of a gun.
Yeah, the only rights you have are the ones that you can defend.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's a right, but you can't defend it, then it's theoretical.
No, I think it's still I think you probably agree more with Ian on this than the right exists. Just because someone infringes upon it doesn't mean you've lost the right. It just means they've infringed upon it.
But I mean, like Ecuador, tribes in Ecuador until like 1950 believed it was a right that you could just kill a tribe member and eat them.
Right, but because people have a right to self-defense, there's some things that are more discernibly true than others, right? Like, oh, it's my right to kill and eat you. If that were the case, then you'd have to just submit to them doing it. But you have a right to defend yourself and say, nope, that's actually not your right because now I'm going to end you for trying to harm me.
But rights are also cultural, though.
Yeah, so I agree and disagree. I think that there are certain things that are obvious and intrinsic. I certainly think there are people on the right and the left that believe that there are rights that are intrinsic that aren't. Like healthcare as a human right is not true. And there are certain things people think are rights. Well, actually, I think you have a lot of rights. A lot. I think mostly this refers to just what you can do. It's hard to define, but typically without violating the, you know, non-aggression principle. Well, I don't know.
Well, there's positive rights and there's negative rights.
Right.
And
yeah, I think positive rights are mostly...
Good libertarians believe in negative rights.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you meet a libertarian and you're like, wow, this person really sucks in everything they believe and they sound like a leftist, they believe in positive rights.
Right.
But negative rights are where it's at.
Yeah, positive rights, I think, I'm sure there's some nuance here, but mostly make no sense at all. Like healthcare being a human right is a positive right. That makes no sense. Someone has to give it to you or provide it for you. You can't force someone to do that. But I think if you're in the middle of the woods, you can do a lot of things that no one can stop you from doing. And that means there's a lot of really awful things you could probably do to yourself. Like you mentioned, putting whatever you want in your own body. I'm like, a lot of people would argue you don't have that right, but you literally do. You can eat a pine cone if you want.
But I don't think that's bad, necessarily.
I would recommend against eating a pine cone, but, you know, some people want to eat pine cones, I guess. And there's also pica, and I think people shouldn't do that. There is a challenge, though. I mean, if you saw someone eating pennies, wouldn't you stop them?
Would I stop them?
Yeah.
If I love them, I'd stop them.
It's not always so easy, I guess. There's a lot of things we think we know.
If I did, I'd advise against it.
All right. Little Tales Farm says, Tim, we just got an 8x16 tiny home/coop delivered today and started building our version of Chicken City. Gonna film it start to finish and post it on our channel. Thanks for the encouragement for this. Absolutely. We just started trenching for our Chicken City. We have 5 Black Star babies.
They're so cute.
Yes, they are little poof balls. For those that aren't aware, and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on chickens or anything, but we have a Rhode Island Red rooster, and we have Barred Plymouth Rock hens, 2 of them. Well, the rooster and the hens got together. They had a whole lot of fun. Mm-hmm. We took the eggs. We incubated 12. None of them survived except the Black Star. So Black Star is a sex link. It means that if you take the specific rooster and hen and put them together, you get a very specific offspring where the boys have little white spots on their heads and the girls don't, so you can easily tell them apart. But the crazy thing is if you then mix the Black Stars together, you don't get the same, you get just a mix. It's like, it's really crazy how that works. And so there's a couple other, I guess we can do. I think we're able to do Red Star chickens as well by hybriding with the Rhode Island Red Rooster. So this will be a lot of fun. And then we have 3 goofy looking babies that hatched that we've been filming for a while. It's, we think it's 2 hens and a rooster. And, the rooster's name is officially Roberto Jr. Because Roberto is the rooster and it's his first son. And then we're trying to figure out the names. I guess it's Sally and Alex. We're naming the 2 hens. And the reason we chose Alex is because we think it's a hen, but we're not entirely sure. So, hey, this name is safe.
There you go.
And then we're going to be building Chicken City. Now, the challenge is we have 3 Black Star roosters. I don't know what we're going to do with a bunch of roosters.
Chicken City sounds something that would be like on The Office, like Michael Scott would come up with, like in the break room. I cannot wait to see the finished product.
Yeah, we're going to have cameras all around it, live stream 24/7.
Yes.
And it's pretty awesome.
The reason we, it's been a long time coming is because we wanted to do it with the existing coop we have, but it's ill-equipped to handle the chickens properly. Hmm. And so we're rebuilding a better one so that it's easier for us to clean, easier for us to move in and out of and collect eggs and things like that, easier for us to put cameras. And the issue, you want to know why this is taking so long to get all the stuff done? No people working. Nobody's working. Mm-hmm. No joke. We're trying to find people who want to do a lot of the work, and it's hard. It's hard to find workers. And I know we have a lot of emails for a lot of jobs, but I mean like legit contractors who can be like, mm-hmm. I can hammer this out and get it done instantly. In the area, we're going as fast as we can. And it's not so easy too. A lot of people there's a lot of people also who are like, you know, I'll come out and I'll help. And it's like, yes, but it's also like getting the materials, getting supplies.
Yeah.
There are periods where it's like the guys who are working are like, yeah, we got to wait for the wood to come in. And it's just like the supply chain disruptions and labor shortages across the board ripple all the way down to us building a chicken coop.
Yep.
All right. Let's see what we got. What we got. Popular Liberty says chaos gives the state more power. Mm-hmm.
That's my friend Andrew.
There you go.
Cool.
He has some ideas for local politics that are going to blow people away.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah.
Andrew Braswell says, very excited to see Pete on. Now that you've had him on, Michael Malice, Dave Smith, and Scott Horton, you only need to have on Tom Woods and Bob Murphy to complete your top-tier Austro-Libertarian podcaster collection.
Bob Murphy, huh?
Collection.
That's a great idea.
He was just on with Jordan. He was just on with Jordan Peterson.
He's on my list, my short list.
Watcher of Shadows says, I'm sorry, but the idea the U.S. should break up is stupid, unless you plan to learn Mandarin. I actually agree with that.
Really? What did Hirohito say?
What did he say? A gun behind every blade of grass?
Yeah.
I don't know that he actually said that, but of course. It sounds cool anyway.
But it makes sense if you know once you get off the coasts.
So I suppose the bigger issue is.
But so Switzerland has been sitting in the middle of Europe, a small country. I think it's 21 cantons. It's broken up. And they've avoided war for over three, four centuries now. They avoided two world wars. Why?
Why is that?
The banks are located?
Everyone has a gun.
Everyone. All of these things are right.
Yeah.
But they're not a threat to anybody.
Mm. And they were mountainous. So before gunpowder, they couldn't get taken. They'd try, and they had these long pikes. And they just
The United States has gone into – is dropping bombs in seven countries right now. And I think a lot of people look at them as a threat.
Yeah, I think that's a really bad thing. But I don't think the learn Mandarin is implying that China invades the United States. It's implying that China's influence grows so substantially and controls so much of the resources of the planet.
China's second largest mortgage company, Evergrande, is their bonds were just taken off the market.
What does that mean?
That means that they're basically out of business.
What happened?
BlackRock took their...
No. This is because China has done in 25 years to their economy what the Federal Reserve has been doing for 100 years in this country. They were 100, their debt was 100% of GDP in 1995. Ooh. It's now 255 times, which is basically ours. So their debt's piling up. But the problem is they don't have a central bank. They don't have a Janet Yellen. They don't have a Paul Volcker to guide them and keep them going. Mm-hmm. They're financially dying right now, mm-hmm. to the point where I can pull up articles of people calling for cultural revolutions, and they're not calling for cultural. And if these cultural revolutions happen, it's not going to be pointed at us. It's going to be pointed inwards at their own people. I think that China, anyone who is saying that China is this insane threat as far as financial systems go, does not read David Stockman, who is Ronald Reagan's budget director, was in the White House with Ronald Reagan's budget director, doesn't read Zero Hedge, and just isn't up to date on what their economy is doing right now. I mean, they are dying. You know, everybody's like, oh, their GDP is so amazing. Yeah, those cities that they build that no one lives in, that's part of their GDP.
I thought it was like 8 or so years ago, people started moving in and they've been building up.
No, they still have those cities.
There's a lot of them, but I'm pretty sure they started moving people in.
Yeah. But they're at this point. So here's another great little stat. in this country, 1% of farming, either by machine, either by hand or by animal, is done by 1% of farmers. 30% of the farmers in China are still either farming by hand or plowing.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I mean, they have a higher rate of diabetes right now than we do.
Jeez.
Wow.
I mean, this is whoever is feeding. I mean, sure, of course they are to be worried about because they control, they're so big a part of our economy. But watch what's happening to them financially right now. They are in tons of trouble. There's a book by a Harvard professor called Unrivaled. He wrote it in 2018. He goes through all these demographics about China and just, and this is a war hawk. And he comes to the conclusion that these are, we're not supposed to worry about these people. And this isn't a realist. This isn't an anti-war guy. This is a guy who would say, okay, we need to do something. And this book Unrivaled just breaks it down as to why China is just in so much trouble.
Hmm. We'll do one more. Ed's World says, does Ian believe in God? Doubtful.
Well, I think that there is, you got to define God. That's my lifelong goal, one of them. I think that cosmic microwave background radiation is likely interfering with matter, like solids, liquids, and gases, and causing what we perceive as God. So I definitely, there's something there. Like there's a, you know, there's an, some energy flowing. Whether or not it's intelligent, I don't know. It seems to move intelligently.
You know, the way I see it is kind of like, do people believe that they are the supreme intelligence of the universe, or at least that there is life within the universe that is, that there is nothing else above it, or is there something above the universe? The way I see it is like, anything that exists within the universe is certainly below the construct itself, or whatever this higher system is that which we exist in. So God clearly exists in that sense.
Yeah, and Tim, a couple, like last week, mentioned the like subatomic fluctuations and like you see the spinners and all this. So I talk about it like it's the CMBR, that cosmic microwave background radiation, but that's just like the radiation. That's just the energy, like the, I don't know if it's just electrons or plasma or what, but it could be, it's got to be more than that.
I see it like, do you think that the universe is a flat plane on which you are standing and it's meaningless and random? Or do you believe that the system in place is more powerful and above you? Or even beyond that, could there be something that exists beyond the universe as we know it? And I think even if we're looking at like M theory and, you know, multiple dimensions and stuff, then the answer is clearly yes. In which case, humans are so far away from any kind of higher life. It's easy to say math should predict a higher form of intelligent life somewhere, somehow, even if it's something we create with computers. But if that's certainly capable of existing, there's certainly higher powers than human beings. The problem is that people define God as like a guy in the clouds who's, you know, snapping his fingers to make things appear, when it could be so far beyond our comprehension that we couldn't even describe.
Yeah, I got to get away from the guy, God being a guy. That really disturbs me. When they say he gave us this, that I feel like is brain, like Catholic brainwashing, patriarchy in action.
I think that's language. And
guy,
you know,
calling it a man is weird to me.
Anthropomorphizing.
Well, yeah. Let's do this. We'll go over to start producing this here bonus members only segment. Yes. So make sure you go to timcast.com, sign up. You can smash the like button, subscribe to the channel, share the show with your friends. You can follow the show at TimcastIRL on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, whatever. We'll put up the addresses, but you can follow me personally at Timcast. You want to shout anything out, Sean?
Oh yeah, can I promote my book? Is that cool? So my book just came out a couple days ago, right? I think this week. It's called Left for Dead.
You got a lot of books.
I know, I have five now. You've not read any of them.
Not a single one.
Have you done the audiobook?
I don't read them, but someone does. Oh. But look, the book is called Left for Dead. What I try to do is like look at where we are as a country and say if we stay on this path, we could be here. Well, I mean, sometimes I'm proud when I get it right. This time I'm not, because we've got Americans left behind, surrounded by global jihadists in Afghanistan right now. We've got to do everything we can to get them out. But this just came out. Like, if you can manage it, grab a copy. Like, it would be an honor. But yeah, this is, I'm psyched. I'm psyched about it.
Where do people get it?
Oh, you can get it anywhere books are sold. Amazon, yeah, it's at anywhere, Amazon, cool. Whatever. But this
but try
is...
to find it somewhere other than Amazon.
Yeah.
Or whatever, I guess.
Whatever, no, whatever.
As much as I don't like Amazon, the great thing about it is if everyone buys the book and it gets it to number one, then mm-hmm. that's free promotion on a massive platform.
This is a huge deal. It's very, very difficult to make the New York Times bestseller list. I've made that list before. I am a New York Times bestselling author, but for fiction, it's really hard. Because you'll have, you know, John Grisham and Stephen King and all these heavyweights. J.K. Rowling that will have books on there all year. And so it's hard for a guy like me to make it on that list. But also if this Senate race, right, and politics, if saving this country is so important to you, then contribute to my campaign because it's just – my campaign is driven by small dollar donors. We had 45,000 individual donors in 2020. If I'm beholden to anybody, it's to the people. And if you want to win, if you want to save this country, we have to win Pennsylvania. So go to ParnellForSenate.com and chip in if you can.
How many L's in Parnell? Two.
Two. ParnellForSenate.com. Help me win Pennsylvania and save America because we have to. This is a zero-sum game in 2022.
Cool.
So. Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. Obviously, if I'm having videos taken down off of YouTube, I'm probably doing something right.
Yeah.
And check out our documentary on Amazon, The Monopoly on Violence.
Thanks for coming, guys. I've been really beat up about this Afghanistan surrender. It's almost destroyed my mind. So thanks for being here with us the last week. And this last week's been really rough for me too. So apologize if I've come off a little aggressive, but how are we gonna do? I don't know. Thanks for being here anyway. Catch you later. Love you.
I started listening to Peter's documentary on the way to pick him up this afternoon, and it is a wonderful documentary. And they start way back in history, which is exactly what I want from my documentaries. I want to get the full story, and it sounds awesome. So check out The Monopoly on Violence.
Thank you.
By Peter Quinonius. And you guys can follow me at Sour Patch Lids on Twitter.com as I attempt to have more followers than Sour Patch Kids. Very important.
We will see you all over at TimCast.com in the members segment. Should be up around 11 or so p.m. Thanks for hanging out. We'll see you there.
Bye, guys.